Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/watchoutforfireballs. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For Swain doth a beggar ride. Better to prostrate thine self to the heavens than spilt blood unto the skyward regalia.
But Delita, those noble Cremrines and House Gul'tana fly the banner of fealty while sitting on a throne of leathered fingers. They speak honeyed words with nutra-sweetened tongues, but their blood is no rarer than Nioth.
Ramza, thou's naive Padwallow, boast of we who cloak the crimson doth not stare a liar's purse in the strings? Better to cut said velvet strands and cockcrow as a piper ryback fit only for slaughter.
Think of Alma and Teatra, twin garments of safekeeping, vouch held near to my ventricles, and torn a twain by this war of the lions. Brother's mind doth hover, yes, but there's hegemony in the hovering, and gloves in the covering. Five fingers splayed like grass underneath thine boot.
Grass. Ramza, remember when thine sire engaged pedagogy of the verdigris and created dissonant clefts and staffs upon the slate-gray expanse? Here, to this moment, we stand and make winds upon willowed blades.
Delita! Rivery spaces and eons this be not! Players of mind and balm of flame dost be about. Pray, let me unhitch our twin Jacobos so that we might ride, horizon-bound, to the next scene of Kat.
Ramza, 'tis late of two. Brigands and cutpaws approach. We must turn the blood to boil and sift our ashes through the scarlet.
Delita! Hasten to slow the flapping of your jowls. 'Tis not the time for the delicate arrangement of vowels and consonants. We are surrounded!
Back to back with me, brother of deed and word, though not blood, and our common bond be none the weaker for it. Concern thine eyes around thee for globes of brilliant phosphorescence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you are listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a retro video games podcast.
And this week we are talking about Final Fantasy Tactics, which is a tactical role-playing game developed by Square for the PlayStation 1 in 1998.
And the majority of this game kind of takes place in turn-based battle, where you kind of issue commands to a handful of units who fight enemy troops and monsters on a 3D battlefield. True to its name, you're best served by being very deliberate with your actions, because your position relative to the enemy, the range of your attacks, who attacks in what order, all these things can have a huge effect on success or failure of the battle.
The game is probably most notable for its implementation of the job system, which was seen previously in Final Fantasies III and V. By gaining job points in various classes by doing things as that class, you unlock skills and abilities that can be kind of mixed and matched with other jobs, which lets you create incredibly powerful hybrids that match your preferred style of play, or maybe just break the game entirely.
Yep, and I'm going to make a declarative statement that I am 100% comfortable with and say this is the best implementation of the job system in Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this. In Final Fantasy III, I think, is no great shakes. Final Fantasy V is real good. Yep. I think this is better, and the job system works out better.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Yep. Although I have to say, the weapon upgrading, I can't even do it.
Yusimi Matsuno headed the development of Final Fantasy Tactics after leaving Quest, the developer of Ogre Battle and Tactics Ogre. Final Fantasy Tactics bears a strong resemblance to the latter, but was developed in response to casual gamers complaining that the branching storylines of the Ogre games were too intimidating.
There was something.
The fools.
There was something that I came across in the research for this. Apparently, this game was supposed to have some choose your own adventure elements to it.
Hmm.
Be still my heart.
I sent you, didn't I, the visual novels, like the guy who transposed the sound novels.
No.
From this. Yeah, well, I'll send you those to put in the note. I haven't done them yet, but these are the sound novels are taken out of the North American release of Final Fantasy Tactics. Mm-hmm. They're like little side stories that you do, and some guy put them up online. There's three of them. And they're like little choose your own adventure music. So you get like little questions that have branching paths, and it plays music and stuff between. Real neat.
Huh. That sounds.
I'll send those to you. I thought I was kind of swore I saw those two because I was like, holy shit, Cole's going to shit a brick.
Nope.
Like they're Final Fantasy Tactic guide and sound novels. Like
if you sent them, I didn't get them. I apologize. No.
Maybe I put them up on the Facebook and they got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, that does move pretty fast. We're real popular.
I could have handled branching storylines.
Yeah.
Have you played Tactics Ogre?
No, I have not.
I haven't beat it. I have played it. It's real good. It's real similar to this, but it doesn't have that job system. So it's like that's a huge deal. And I played a lot of knockoffs of this game, you know, in the mid-90s. And without that job system, they're lacking quite a bit.
Yeah, I was really intrigued by the remake of Tactics Ogre that came out, like We Must Die Together or something like that, something deliciously Japanese. But I've never owned a PSP. If I did get a PSP, that would be one that I would snag up real quick.
The PSP is a great system for this genre.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things where Jeanne d'Arc is on that system, and bunch of good games on that. That's on my list. Like, I like this genre quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So Final Fantasy Tactics specifically, though, just like Tactics Ogre, has also been remade for the PSP. This happened in 2007, and it was subtitled The War of the Lions. The biggest improvement is the translation, which fixed all the, the English. Is that term racist? I can never tell.
It's the most apt way to say it. I don't feel comfortable.
You know what we mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know what we mean. It's study sword. Barry. Like, it made no sense.
Yeah.
Or
it directly contradicted itself many times.
The port, so the PSP version was released for iOS several years later, which I think is how both Cole and I played through it on this playthrough.
Yeah. Did you do it on your iPhone?
Yeah.
Okay, I did it on my iPad.
Yep.
Yep. And it works. It works real well. You feel kind of like a wizard getting people to do what you want with your finger.
Yes.
Okay, that came out a little...
what a weird statement, Cole. I feel a little bit like a wizard getting people to do what you want with their finger.
Yeah, you know, I point and then they do what I tell them to. Oftentimes marching to their deaths. Final Fantasy Tactics spawned a number of spinoffs and spiritual successors. Vagrant Story was the one that came out pretty much directly after it. It takes place in Ivalice a few centuries after the events of Final Fantasy Tactics. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance for the Game Boy Advance and Final Fantasy Tactics A2 for the DS both take place in this kind of storybook version of Ivalice. From several centuries before FFT. And finally, Final Fantasy XII and Final Fantasy Revenant Wings take place in Ivalice shortly after the Advance games. So this game, Final Fantasy Tactics, started this whole mythology of this world that several side games in the Square universe have resided in.
Yeah, it's my favorite Ivalice game. I want to revisit Vagrant Story at some point.
Yeah.
Like, I played it when I was probably too young to appreciate it. And the Tactics Advance games, like, I played through the first one and played about halfway through the second one just because I was kind of hungry for more similar content. But they're not as good in many ways that kind of, like, many small ways that add up to a much less satisfying experience.
Yes. I found myself turned off by the aesthetic, by, like, the story of the Advance games a little
bit.
And they put a lot of restrictions on stuff. Like, I remember in both of them, your learning is tied to the whatever weapon you have equipped.
Yep.
So it's like Final Fantasy IX in that regard. But
Final Fantasy XII, where, like, you have to buy, like, you're purchasing, like, where you can purchase things limits your ability.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's been, like, a problem I've always had with Final Fantasy XII.
Yeah, I liked Final Fantasy XII, but I can definitely see where it's a slog for a lot of people, so.
Yeah, there are lots of little problems with it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the plot of this game?
Yeah. Well, Final Fantasy Tactics, it has this absurdly intricate plot that leans heavily on references to the War of the Roses, not the Danny DeVito movie from the early 90s, but actually the one that took place over in over in England. So what we're about to say should be considered the idiot's guide to the plot of the game, so all apologies for that.
Yeah, there's probably people who will listen to this and will point out things that we got wrong, which always happens.
Yep.
Like whenever we record,
we welcome.
But in this case, I'm guarantee we'll get it wrong. And it's like the game, and we'll talk about this at length, I'm sure, especially in the next episode. But the game loses all that sense of economy to the plot in the second half.
Yes.
The first half, it's very compelling and relatively tight, and it just starts to unravel near, you know, where we're covering with this episode.
Yeah.
And kind of becomes something less than, and something a little bit more generic, and kind of, frankly, like, more Final Fantasy-y.
Yeah, the introduction of the supernatural elements, honestly, when it was about political intrigue and things like that, and when the conflict was greater than you, and you were very much a I was about to say a pog, but a pog.
when you were a pog.
When you were a mere pog in this
a pog in the machine.
Yes, just waiting for a slammer to come down. No, no, but like when it feels like you're a pawn, it feels, you know, it's much more majestic. But when you become the plucky hero who saves the world, it loses a lot of its charm. But that's in the next episode. If we didn't make it clear in the intro, this is part one of two. We're going up through chapter two. There are four chapters, so that just kind of makes sense for us. Yeah.
Yep, and it kind of balances out well as well.
Yeah.
So the story is told as kind of an account from a historian who seeks to vindicate the heretic Ramsa, who's the main character you play as in the game, who is popularly thought to have been a terrorist against the church and the kingdom during this War of the Lions.
Yeah. So just prior to the beginning of Final Fantasy Tactics, the kingdom of Ivalis has kind of reached this uneasy peace after the 50 years war against a neighboring kingdom, Ordalia. It's then plunged into a bitter war of succession after King Andoria dies and leaves behind two potential heirs, Prince Ornius and Princess Ovelia. Now, this is where it gets complicated, and it's where the lions come in. Mm. Ornius is supported by Prince Larg of the White Lion and also Queen Ruvelia, while, Ovelia is supported by Duke Gul'tana of the Black Lion. And both of these so-called lions, these dukes, are secretly vying to manipulate these heirs so that they can take control of the kingdom.
Right. And part of what makes this plot so hard to follow is the constant dropping of flowery names.
Yes. All like, these O's.
Yeah, all these O's. I mean, too many O's. It's like way too many O's.
Yeah. They give you this option in the menu to look at character bios, and I'm normally all about that, but it is a bit of a slog to get through, but there's very relevant information in there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, and playing into that earlier point that we said, like, playing this game for the story, like, the story starts out very strong, gets a little bit weaker, but still serviceable,
yeah.
But I don't think that's why anybody really plays through this game.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, so when you start out, you begin with your Ramsay Beolve?
Beolve, I think.
Beolve? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Ramsay Beolve, a fallen noble who is working with a mercenary band to protect Princess Ovelia from the various lions. After a battle at a monastery, Ovelia is kidnapped by your childhood friend, Delita Hyrule?
Yes, Hyrule. Yeah.
Yeah.
So chapter one is a flashback to Ramsa and Delita's first missions after graduating from a military academy. You know, Ramsa's a noble, Delita's a commoner. There's a lot of social commentary in this first part, which is pretty neat. They're working for the Beowulfs to eradicate the Corpse Brigade, who is an army of soldiers who fought in the 50-year war and are seeking just compensation and fair treatment after coming back. Where's their parade, Gary?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's all these hippies spitting on them and shit.
Jesus. during the course of the struggle, they come across Argath, the biggest just asshole in the world. He's another noble who is personally offended by Delita's presence, since he is just a mere commoner.
Yeah, he's a real dickhead. And he looks like Richie Rich.
Yep.
Like, he looks like a cartoon Richie Rich or I don't know why the name is escaping me, the shit heel from Earthbound.
Oh, yeah. Pokey? Porky?
Yeah, he's a little bit like a Pokey.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
like a medieval pokey.
medieval pokey. Gonna throw you in the medieval pokey.
The real medieval pokey would be some kind of like just blood curdling torture device. Like we call this the medieval pokey. It's a winch that we put up assholes to rip them away, and like it's probably, you know, the worst possible torture.
The worst way to die.
I've gone to medieval times a couple times and gone through the torture room. I know my shit.
The thing that bothers me most about Argith is his sprite looks like he's wearing suspenders.
Yeah, yeah. He's real G-golly. He's like a little Ross Perot.
He's a little stinker is what he is.
After dealing with that little shithead, you get to the final battle of this chapter where your sister has been taken hostage and used as a human shield.
Delita's sister.
Yeah, Delita's sister, rather, yes. Tietra. And that's because the people who are taking her hostage think that she is a noble because she hung out around the noble house, i.e. castle. Argath shoots Tietra, kind of denying the rebels their bargaining chip, and tries to kill the remaining leader of the corpse brigade and kills her instead. I'm sorry. Let me take that again. He's doing it on purpose. He's not trying to kill the leader.
Is he? Oh,
yeah,
shit. Wow.
100%. Like he's like, that's the evilness of this. Like they think they have this gambling chip.
Huh?
And they're taking it away from them.
So Argith isn't the good guy.
No, he's not. And Zarg or Zalbag orders him to.
Okay. Yeah.
He tells her, like, take care of it. So this is, okay. You know, this is some next level super villainy here.
I thought so, but like what made that more compelling to me is that if this whole thing was an accident and that was what gave him, that was what gave Delita his, if it's a comedy of errors, that's almost more interesting to me than just regular base level comic book villainy.
The comic book villainy, well, there's plenty of room for that later.
Yes,
it is. This is definitely no accident. Like I definitely read that scene as him shooting her on purpose.
Okay.
Should I take that again, or do you want to leave in that aside?
I'll leave it in.
Okay. So Argath takes away the bargaining chip, kills Delita's sister Tietra, and you kind of switch sides at that point, and you side with Delita, but this kind of breaks Delita's mind.
Yeah.
And you kill Argath. And you're getting ready to part ways when the silo they're in explodes, and Ramza leaves his noble life behind, and Delita is missing.
Yes, presumed dead in the explosion. Yep. The best place to hide is the place where they keep all the gunpowder.
Why do they have
gunpowder if guns are a mysterious? Huh. Okay.
Just for blowing stuff up.
You know, just for fun.
Powder. Yeah. There's a weird couple. Well, I'll talk about it later when we get to it. There's a couple weird anachronism. You know, things that happened in this game.
True.
So they're kind of strange.
So chapter two takes place in the present day, quote unquote, as Ramza is working with mercenaries to recover Ovelia from her kidnappers, who turn out to actually be taking orders from Ramza's older half-brother, Dice Darg. Man, I hate that name so much.
Dicey Darg.
Dicey
Darg.
Dicey Darg.
Dicey Darg. There's a couple of real dumb sounding names.
Yeah. But I still feel the need to comment on them. So
no, I mean, this one's real bad because he's supposed to be this ultimate cold hearted badass.
Yeah, yeah.
He's called Dice Darg.
Dice Darg. Yeah. After they succeed in getting Ovelia back, they attempt to find some sanctuary with Cardinal Delacroix in the Lionel Castle. But they find out that he, too, is working for the Lions.
Yep. And then there's kind of a weird little side story where you have a chance meeting with a machinist named Mustadio, who reveals that most of the events are centered around the hunt for Zodiac Stones. These are these ancient relics of the Zodiac Braves. He used them to fight against the demonic Lukavi. This is essentially just the world's religion. Yeah. You know, like this is their Bible stuff. Mm-hmm. Ovelia is being used as a bargaining chip to gain possession of one of the stones. And in the final battle of the chapter, Ramza kills the mercenary traitor Gafgarian and corners Delacroix, who uses the Zodiac Stone to transform into a hideous demon, essentially Oogie Boogie Man from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Pretty much.
And Ramza kills him, but is forever branded as a heretic for doing so.
Yes, and that ends this stretch of the game.
Yep, and where we're covering for this episode.
Yeah, yeah. So I like the plot up to here. So, you know, a lot. All of that political intrigue and, you know, puppet strings and things like that. Real neat.
Yep. And there, it's not like the second half is devoid of cool things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's serviceable at worst. It just gets a little bit more pedestrian. So the first the chapters have names that are all like pretty funny and dramatic when they come up on the title card. And the first chapter one is The Meager.
Yes.
And it opens up with kind of a cool little cutscene. Agrius, who is a knight, you know, who is protecting Ovelia, is praying in a church. And you are one of these. You're working with Gafgarian, and people show up to attack at that point, and you get this first kind of tutorial battle.
Yeah. I remember being really turned off by the tutorial battle when I first played it. Now it's just kind of a minor annoyance to me.
You should be able to skip it.
Yeah.
But it's better than the tutorial battle in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance.
True.
Which is a snowball fight, which is kind of cute, but it takes forever. Yeah. It's just it's weird. There's no point to it. Like, you can control yourself, but the computer is AI controlled.
Yeah.
But then immediately in the next battle, you control everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're ramping you into the concept or anything like that.
No. The only thing that's useful about it is being able to watch kind of the decisions that the computer makes. A little bit. So just kind of like saying like, okay, it's moving, and you can kind of follow the step-by-step kind of thing, which is a little bit better than it just saying like, hey, do this, then do this, like holding your hands for every button press. But that is the only thing that on a conceptual level that I can like about it.
And you should be able to skip it even then.
Yeah.
Like, if it was your first time, that might be very helpful. Like, a lot of people came to this on the success of Final Fantasy VII, myself included. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know what I was getting into. And so that might have been useful to me to have just this one little bit of watching thing. But this being the kind of game I've replayed many, many times,
yeah,
I would like to have that. So the basic moveset that you have when you control, playing it this time, I realized how much it's like Dungeons & Dragons 3.5.
Yeah.
Like this whole, like, you get a move action and you get an action action.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take them in any order. Like, it's a lot like, and you're on a grid-based system on a table. Like, it's a lot like playing, you know, a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah. And that's, I think, why I took to tabletop games so much, because when I came to that, it was right after I really dove into this game as mm-hmm. well. Yeah.
Yeah. Super, super fun. And it's real dramatic. It's like raining and mm-hmm. stuff. Like, the presentation in this game is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the opening cutscene, which we didn't talk about so much, with the galloping chocobos through the woods.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a tone that hasn't been applied to the Final Fantasy series
mm-hmm.
before. Like, there's a seriousness to this game that has never really been done like that. Like, Final Fantasy games get serious,
mm-hmm.
but there's kind of like a drama and weight to this that is uncommon for the series.
It's like diametrically opposed to like Final Fantasy IX.
Right. And I love the intro to Final Fantasy
IX. Oh, me too.
But the it's a different kind of, like, it's just a real different flavor. And this first battle with the church and the, like, you know, spare us those sinful children of Ivalice. Like, mm-hmm. it's real cool. Like, it's melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole game is melodrama, but it's real good melodrama.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. If that's not a contradiction in terms.
No. I mean, you know? if you can tolerate it, especially in the new translation, kind of the purple prose.
The Shakespeare version. Because it, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, whereas the original version, people just said a lot of things that didn't make very much sense.
Yeah. And this one, you can kind of follow it just a little bit better. But on that note, if you didn't play the War of the Lions version for this, and you just got the regular one, it's still, like, the same stuff happens. It's just a little bit more scrutable in this, and then, you know, this go around, right?
A little clearer and a little better looking. By which I mean in the cutscenes and stuff. There are more cutscenes, which we'll get to in a moment. There's, like, nice little bit of characterization in here as well. Like, Gafgarian, you know, the picture they paint of Gafgarian starts coming together right in this very beginning, first cutscene as well.
Yeah. He's basically Ocelot.
yeah. Like, highest bidder.
Yeah.
You know, real shithead mercenary. But mm-hmm. the kind of drama comes at the end where the princess is kidnapped and you run out and see the person who's doing it, and it's definitely Delita.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, you enter into a flashback, which I remember when being kind of confused about when I first played the game,
mm-hmm.
like figuring out exactly what was happening. You know, it kind of starts a medias res and goes back to tell the story.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other games that I played before this that might have been in medias res, but...
I mean, Symphony of the Night does something similar with you starting more powerful and then kind of going back.
Yeah.
No, I guess that's the only big thing.
Like, it's him, like, stripping your power from you. Or no, you start out as, in Symphony of the Night, you start as Belmont, right?
No, that's, or this is dumb. Like, we're going to sound like idiots. No, in Symphony of the Night, you start out as Alucard.
Okay.
And you're running forward in your Alucard army. There is a final – what I was thinking of is what you're thinking of, though, where there's a Castlevania game where you start out as Belmont.
Yeah.
But I – I can't remember. Yeah, tell me, somebody. I'm real sleepy. I apologize.
It's fine. yeah, but it's pretty cool because, you know, there's a little bit of setup here, kind of talking about, you know, just like it kind of eases you into Ramza's family structure just a little bit. And let's be clear, Ramza isn't that interesting of a character.
Right.
You know, he's kind of like Aya in that he is virtuous but good.
Right, right. This is Delita's story.
Yeah, it definitely
is. And that's something they did again with some success in Final Fantasy XII, as much as I have problems with that game.
Yeah.
They have a real bland protagonist because it's really Basha's story.
Yep.
You know, so that's definitely what they're doing here. At this point, you don't necessarily realize that.
Like, there's some interest in, like, the fact that everybody around him is, you know, a manipulator and a cutthroat and things like that, and he is the only, you know, good person, and they call that out, just kind of like saying, hey, that's not how the world works, but like, blah, and people actually use that to their advantage, the fact that he always does what he says he's gonna do.
Right, you know? He's real naive.
Yeah.
He's a sweet kid.
Just needs to grow up a little is all. Yeah.
But when you go to this flashback, you're at the academy, and you do kind of the first battle where you have control of everybody. You are you're at the academy, you know, regulators are mounting up, and some thieves come to attack, and they dispatch you. And this is your first real battle, but it reminds me of, like, in the tradition of games that don't put their best foot forward.
Yeah.
Like, these first couple battles are real boring because you haven't unlocked anything.
Right.
So, like, the same way in, like, you know, and as much as I love the first mission of Deus Ex, a lot of people don't like it because you don't have cool shit to play with so much. You know, and you do have some cool shit to play with, but you get all of your, like, powers and plasmids and all that jazz later on. Whereas, you know, this one, like, most of your guys can attack or potion, and that's it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty bland, but, you know, just stick with it because you eventually will get a lot more utility.
Yeah. I see this mission as kind of a way to introduce the idea of chemists. To you, like, the chemists are real important. I rely on them a lot. It kind of sets up this difference between physical and mental characters. So you lay them out, you have no idea what it's asking you to do, and it says, you know, choose your formation or whatever. And you can really bone yourself if you lay your dudes out wrong or pick the wrong party members. Mm-hmm. And you're wondering where the awesome dude with the glowy swords are.
Right.
Because they were real neat in the first one. I don't have any glowy swords though.
Yeah. And well, then it's the place where you could learn about the two kind of not most important stats, but the two things that you kind of get a dice roll on your first group of guys. Mm-hmm. And the two most important stats in the game are Brave and Faith. And that's what you kind of have privy to in this first part. And Brave, you know, is physical skills, kind of governs those, just for lack of, you know, a more, like, a simplifying way. And then Faith, magical skills. So you can kind of tell what kind of party loadout, you know, you're going to want based on that.
Right.
You know, and there's kind of two, there's like a magic and physical job path. And, you know, characters who have really high Brave are going to excel at the physical one, and characters who have very high Faith are going to excel at the magic one. So, and I would go as far as say this battle is going to be a lot easier if you have a lot of high Brave characters.
Yeah. Just like most of the first part of the game, you'll be helped by having, you know, the majority of your stuff being physical and like one or two, maybe even just one, who is going around healing and playing support.
Yeah.
And that balance shifts a little bit later on. But
yeah.
One thing that's kind of like real annoying about this too, you know, Delita's in your party, but you can't control him.
Yeah. And that becomes infuriating at some later moments.
Yeah.
With some guest characters, which, like, you know, you eventually get to control, but who just make the stupidest fucking decisions. And the AI is just trash,
yeah.
You know, for someone. Whereas the enemy AI seems to be weirdly almost, you know, omniscient.
Yeah.
But like the when they're in my party, they don't do shit.
Exactly.
So, yeah, like guest characters are a weird mechanic in this game. And I don't think it would have hurt anything just to let me have control over them.
Right. Like, you know? Give me control over them. Keep them, you know, plot immortal. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that you're taking up one of my party slots on somebody who's just going to kind of hang back and not do anything, a little infuriating.
And somebody who you have no long-term incentive to upgrade,
right,
or to spend time on. You know, like someone who's going to be leaving, and if you, you know, if you've never played the game before, you don't know who's going to be leaving and who's going to come back. But when the first person leaves, if you spend a bunch of time leveling that person up, you know, that can be kind of a sore moment.
Later, boners. For sure. Yeah.
My home planet needs me.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, so you beat the brigands.
you hew them in twain. Yes. Yeah. and then after that, you are headed to Castle Egros, and you are accosted by monsters on the Mandalia Plain.
The monsters are attacking Argath.
Right? Yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you're saving Argath. And one of the mechanics in this game that is really underused is every once in a while when you get to the beginning of a battle, you have a choice that determines what the outcome will be and also changes your stats a little bit. So in this one, you can say, you know, we have to defeat all the monsters, or you can say we must save Argath. And if you say we must save Argath, he becomes – protecting him becomes a win condition, mm-hmm. but you also get a bump in your brave stat.
Right,
and there are a few places like that later in the game, but they kind of feel—I feel like they fall off pretty seriously in the second half of the game. Stops happening, and it only happens like three times or something. It's a real weird mechanic.
Yeah, it would be awesome if there were more opportunities to do that.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah, because right. You know, it's almost like a miniature difficulty, you know, level. Mm-hmm. Because protecting him, you know, if he falls down, you know, dies, you know, there's no Phoenix Downs. That's it. Right.
Right.
So
right.
You may.
And it might be if I don't know if it's he falls. It might be if he actually dies.
It's if he gets knocked out because it's the same thing with Mustadio later. So yeah, you make the game a lot harder for yourself. So there's that awesome risk reward balance that games tend to do really well. That seems like a missed opportunity to reiterate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a lot more of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see some of the monsters of the game. You're fighting some classic Final Fantasy monsters, some new things.
Yeah.
And you save Argath, and he seems to be on the up and up. You know, he's a grateful little dude, and he's fine.
Yeah, he is. He's rushing to Egros Castle because he's looking for aid. I believe that the Marquis of Andor is being held hostage by the Corpse Brigade, and this
Marquis.
Is. Yes, it is the Marquis. The only reason I'm saying Marquis is because they say Marquis in Final Fantasy XII, and apparently that is the according to them that is the proper pronunciation in Ivalice, which is stupid, and I don't know why I'm doing it.
Yeah, that's weird.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Let's say Marquis from here on.
Yeah, the Marquis of Elmdor.
Yes.
Yeah, who's more or less Sephiroth?
Yeah, that's weird, right? Yeah,
he looks a lot like Sephiroth.
He looks like two or Snake Eyes from 9 Hours.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He wants help because he's been kidnapped, and you go to your castle. This is where you see your father die, right?
It's when you're headed there, you get that cinematic that plays. Mm-hmm. You're not like right there, but it's just kind of a flashback to when that happened, and that's where you get introduced to Dice Dark and Zalbag.
Also not an okay name. the two twin names that strike fear into anyone.
Agreed.
Zalbag and Dice Dog.
This is just unforgivable, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking at Dice Dog and trying to see if there was a cooler way to pronounce it. That, you know, if like maybe it's like Deje Darge or something like that, but they all sound stupid. Like there's no way to twist those letters into something cool.
Disterge, but there's no E at the end.
Disterge.
Yeah,
and Disterge isn't cool either. Like, no. there's nothing. And Zalbag.
Yeah, just the worst syllables that they could put together.
Yeah.
And bag.
Someone just ate a bunch of Scrabble tiles and just puked into the fucking game, the code.
they both use the same Zodiac stone and they churn into Dargbag.
Yeah, Barg. It's just that somebody was trying, it reminds me of Scrabble. Like, it's somebody who's just like, if I use this Z, I'm going to get a lot of points. You know?
Well, you're missing the deceased oldest brother, who actually would have been next in line for the succession, Quijiboo.
Yeah, Quizzy Quabrob.
Yeah.
Crumb Ryan.
That's not nice.
I know. I'm just teasing.
Just teasing. Yeah.
Just running.
Just But, yeah.
Yeah. Your father dies and your brothers, you know, this is kind of some early characterization that your brothers are assholes because like Zalbag is a little gentler with you, but Dice Dorg is, you know, chastising you for not being there and, you know, still giving you kind of shit about your mud blood heritage and stuff. And your dad seems like a stand up dude.
Yeah. It's just like the people who like still give their little brother shit for being adopted at like 15. You see that in the movies or something.
Yeah. You know, it's like, get over it, you asshole.
You've had like a whole life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, don't tease him about it. Yeah. Like, it's okay if like it was weird for you that you have an adopted brother, but he's not even adopted. He's a half brother.
Yeah.
Like it just, you know, it's leave him alone, Dice Dorg. Dice Dorg.
But they criticize him for having too much of their father in him. So yeah. I'm wondering what kind of like royal just pain the mom was that spawned this, because that's that's the genetic missing part. Like all of this evil conniving mom went into these two, and all of the good dad went into Ramza.
She was a loose Marlboro. Like it just you know, some night in the siege wheel, just, you know, got lonesome in the siege wheel.
Yeah.
She had bad breath, but I could look past that. And then just God.
Ours was a love not approved by the clergy.
Yeah.
Oh man. But you know, you don't normally see like family stuff discussed in games though, right?
Yeah. Not with this kind of like, you know, other than like a mom, you know, wake up Chrono. Like just like this is actually family drama and a complicated family.
Mm-hmm. You know. Which is neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you get there and, you know, basically they're like, OK, you're out of the academy. Awesome. Thanks, Ramza. Argith, you're cool. You can stick around. All of you are going to be deployed on guard duty, you know, stand up on the parapets. And Argith is like, fuck that. And so you go off to rescue the Marquis.
Right. Is this the point where Zalbag gives you the hint to go do that? Like you're standing guard, you meet Teatra, and then Zalbag comes up and says, guard duty is pretty boring.
Yep.
You know, I heard about, which is pretty cool. Like Zalbag seems like a stand-up bro, at least initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go to what I would think is one of the worst maps. I don't like this battle or this map at all.
The Dordor Slums?
No, the Siege Wield.
Oh, the Siege Wield.
Yeah. There's not too much to say about it. You're fighting more monsters. There's a ton of these fights that are that are just monsters or brigands, you know, that don't really advance the plot too much. This is one of them. However, like if you come across a real, you know, wet fart of an arena, you have to recognize that every time you walk over it, there's a chance you'll random battle in it. This is a swampy forest kind of thing. You know, your visibility is shit. Your mobility is shit. And it's just not fun.
It introduces those concepts.
Yeah.
Which like to that, I mean, I'll give it credit for that. So like this introduces like depth of water, like rough terrain, weather, because like weather, there's a lot of barely used systems in this game.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of depth to this that you can play the whole game without really even considering. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's raining in this world, which makes fire less powerful and lightning more powerful, which makes sense. But I wouldn't have known that it was a thing until I got an oracle up to the level where they had their ability to ignore weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I've already been ignoring weather. Like, I don't need to buy this.
Yeah.
I ignore weather all the time. And then I like kind of looked into it. I was like, oh, this shit all has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Weird, you know? Yeah. It's no coincidence that it's raining in the first map where they introduce the bombs, which if they use their like blow up attack can be a huge pain in the ass.
Yes.
So that's dampened by the rain.
Yeah, a little bit. And it makes sense that the Dordor Slums, it's raining there too. It's your first encounter with the Black Mages.
Yeah. They want to tone down that fire, which is kind of like the first first spell a lot of characters get, or, you know, increase the lightning.
Yeah, and that's what they do in Dordor Slums, which is like the wake-up call battle for the game, I think.
There's an element of randomness to the abilities that the characters you're going to fight have.
Yes.
So I would die and re-enter a battle and have someone not use the same spells
multiple
times. So like on my Dordor Slums, they did not use lightning.
Yes. Every time I've done the Dordor Slums, they've hit me with lightning.
Yeah, and that sucks. Like that definitely increases the difficulty. The biggest thing that increases the fucking difficulty in the Dordor Slums, though, is that there's an archer to your left when you first enter. Mm-hmm. That both Delita and Argoth think is A1 priority.
Mm-hmm.
no matter what, they're going to go double team this dude and leave the four of you to deal with the entire rest of the battle.
Right.
Like, one of you could go up there and take care of that guy, or we could just kill these fucking mages, because that's what we need to do, guys. But, you know, they both just jolly, you know, climb the house.
Yeah. And, like, if you want to go up there and do it right, because they're not going to do it right, or if you want to get your own archer up there, you know, they're going to be standing in your way, you know?
Right.
So,
this is the first tough battle in the game, I think. You're introduced to mages. Mages are incredibly powerful in this game, both on your side or the enemy side. Mm-hmm. And downright essential with the major, like, kind of climactic and boss battles.
Right.
Being able to deal a huge amount of damage to a guy at once is really, really important. I've been kind of thinking about it on our way to recording this, like how we're going to fit in talking about jobs.
Yeah. I mean, just as we first encounter them, because they roll them out, you know, by battle, right?
Right. Right. The enemy and you can be keeping pace with what you're running up against.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare that the game will introduce something like totally new that you could not have had access to.
Right.
But the way that jobs unlock is a real kind of like, if you start exploring things as you get them, you'll see most of the jobs. But if you have some of them are locked behind bigger gates.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a guide moment, you know, like to get a ninja, you have to be a thief for four levels.
Five.
And like, why would you be a thief for five levels unless you were trying to like min-max it and steal equipment?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So at this point, like for the most part, you're dealing with some mages and, you know, knights.
Right.
Right. The knight might be my least favorite class in this game.
It really sucks. Like the only purpose of like raising a knight high up to my mind, like except for the stats, like because you're always going to need like a grunt. You can just go in and take damage. But is to get equip heavy armor or equip swords,
right?
Because like their advantage is the equipment that they can put on, and their high HP, right?
They can tank it, but they can barely move. They're real slow, and they their specialized moveset is really, you know, real limited use. Like it can be useful for archers and such.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, machinist and chemist with guns, but I do not like them as a class. And you spend a lot of this early part of the game where it's kind of your best option,
right?
And that's real frustrating to me.
Yeah,
and like, they're boring. Like their skills are really boring. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't care for them one bit. Like if you're talking about like their advantage being, you know, disabling, you know, enemies, like the thief skills are a lot better for that.
Yep.
To me. Or you can just go with your orders, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And it's mostly a skill set designed to punish a player and not the computer equally.
Right.
So like if I break a computer's armor, no big deal. If they break my cool armor though, fuck. Or like at the very least, it's an inconvenient trip back to a store.
Right.
You know, to buy new armor. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty obnoxious. They've been used against me. Well, like I had a couple of times where like a mage of mine was charging something and the knight goes up to hit them and I'm like, oh shit, they're going to kill my mage.
Mm-hmm.
But they do that, rend MP attack and make it my mage run out of magic. And I was like, oh, well, well played, computer.
Yeah.
That's a good use for a knight that I, you know,
it's one of those things where it doesn't seem like the game, you know, falls into the trap that other Final Fantasy games do, where like blind and poison are useless because the enemy can use them and they hit you 100% of the time. Like they can be useful on your side, but there are instances where it kind of feels like the random number god is just fucking you over.
Yeah. I've definitely, and this is one of the battles too, where I've had, I first tried this one, this run through, but there are many times where I died and I won on the skin of my teeth. And the reason why it was so difficult is because I was trying to attack, like the last remaining mage. There was like an archer and a mage over on the buildings across the way and trying to kill the mage. And the attack I was using had a 75% chance of hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed something like three times in a row.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've played enough D&D to know that you can roll like three ones in a row on a 1d4,
mm-hmm.
but it's unlikely.
Right.
Like incredibly unlikely.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, it seems, it feels a little cheaty sometimes.
Yeah. And just there are lots of like times, especially in later battles, where it really does come down to the skin of the teeth, where that just kind of like happens, where you'd be like, okay, I have one shot at this. My guy, he's weak, you know, down to the last HP. And, you know, there's one counter left on Ramza. Just kind of like, okay, I got to do this. And then it's kind of like block counter.
Yep.
You're done.
Yeah. And sometimes it adds a little tension and ends up being really cool, mm-hmm. but oftentimes ends up being just frustrating.
It only adds tension when it doesn't happen. When it happens and it fucks you, then it adds frustration.
Right. When it works, it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not quite to white mages yet, but you can see this happen with black mages too. Magic can miss.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the when you talked about the importance of chemist, like that's the big thing with chemist. Yeah. Like that's the best healing class in the game, hands down. Like, you know, and maybe even like the, you know, it's the utility, like it's the secondary skill I have for, you know, had for most of my guys during almost all of chapter one, just having everybody be able to use a potion, not just because it never misses and because it's very significant to be able to heal, but also because of the way the experience system works in this game, which is real interesting.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Is it interesting enough to talk about?
I would say so. I would say if we get through the entirety of Final Fantasy Tactics without talking about how you advance in the game, it might be pretty tricky.
So fighting Eldritch Abominations is just as good a training as throwing rocks at your buddies in a field.
Yep. Yep. It's a little bit like the tabletop RPG Burning Wheel, where like you get better at things the harder it is and the more you do it.
Uh-huh.
So like things that when attacking enemies that are stronger than you, no matter what you're doing, is going to make you better at what you're doing, you know, and that's really cool. But it leads you to being able to very easily kind of, and like when you're grinding, you know, a lot of times like get an enemy down to a scared state, you know, where he kind of runs away, and then just have all your guys stand around in a circle, punching each other in the back and healing, you know, it breaks the immersion, I guess, but it's like really efficient.
You're just running drills.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a war party. You know, just kind of doing training, sparring, you know?
Yeah, sparring, and then they go eat Sabaro later. That was dumb. I'm sorry.
No, I kind of liked it. I don't know. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Okay. I'm not a confident man, Gary.
You'll spar and Sabaro. Yeah.
Sparrow. Yes. But there are two types of experience that you get. Mm-hmm. So there's regular, you know, plain old vanilla EXP. And even after all these years, I'm a little bit unclear about what that is. So is that just your general power level and whatever class you are at the time determines what stat grows?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's something you get a level every 100 points of experience, no matter what. It's not like an exponential kind of increase. It's not harder to level up as you go. Right. If you're fighting guys that are the same amount, you know, same difficulty level higher than you, you'll gain levels at a steady rate.
Right.
And then just what class you're in determined. So there's, if you want to game the shit out of this, like you can stay really low level until you unlock, you know, or try to unlock classes really quickly that have the stats you want. You know, like I never worry about stat growth.
Neither do I
in this game. Like that's a level of alchemy that I don't really want to get into with this, and it's unnecessary to do so.
You're fine just relying on brave and faith and understanding how those interact.
Right, and coming up with like ability sets,
yeah,
is interesting to me. Like the spreadsheet EVE Online shit that can happen with you know, well, if I'm a ninja for 5 levels, I'll have this speed, and then I need to change to a samurai for 6 levels, so I have this strength and stuff like that. No, like, I can't do that.
You have a lot of fun in the menus of this game. Like that's where I spend the majority of my time, I would say.
Yeah.
But like that is one level beyond.
Yep. Yeah. And then the other thing is job level, which is more important in a lot of ways, because you use job points to gain job levels, which is how you unlock later jobs, and also to buy abilities for your jobs. Gain job point up is like the best support ability for 3/4 of the game. It's essential.
Yeah.
It's the first thing you should unlock with every character. Should spend a few battles as a squire to get that.
Exactamundo. And you know, when you learn those abilities, you can assign a secondary ability and also a counter and just a general support and then a movement. Mm-hmm. So like that gives you tremendous kind of leeway to make a character to play as how you want.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's kind of character creation in the game. Like you're constantly crafting your guys to meet the situations you're coming to. And that's why it's so compelling. Like the job system in this game is one of the best mechanical, like advancing systems, one of the best leveling systems, I think, in gaming history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so, so good. the other class you have at this point is the archer, too. And archers are really underwhelming as well. Like when revisiting this, I'm realizing like how much of the kind of really high-level cool-ass shit doesn't come until a little bit later.
Yeah. I like archers a lot. Like, I have one... Like, whenever I play, I usually get one person up in archers. In archery, just because, like with most other classes, you get their skill and then you move on to the next one that fits better. But archers are the only, they're the only class in the game or job in the game that can equip bows, not just crossbows, but bows. And bows have a really interesting effect because their range gets greater the higher you are, and they arc. So if you know that you're going to be in an arena that has walls or other kind of obstructions, you can actually get in hits on enemies way before they ever have a chance to, you know, to get in a hit on you. Their charge ability is kind of bullshit.
Charge is real garbage.
Yeah, chargeage. But it's just because like spells, it takes turns to charge up, and you can get up to like charge plus 20. And if you know how to read the AT on the enemy that you're attacking,
AT.
that's another level of alchemy. But if you can count on that person staying still, it's just kind of like, okay, I can attack you for more damage a little bit later. Okay, fine, but it's useless.
It's marginally more damage. It's almost never worth the weight. I mean, the thing with the bows too is that I just feel like they're a little underpowered. Like, I like the utility that you're talking about, but I want them to have significantly more damage to them. Like, by the time, I use an archer for a short time, and then eventually I get Mustadio, and then I can have chemist use guns.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot better.
Yeah. I only say that because right now I'm still in the early, the first, 2/3 of the game, let's say. And that's where they're really useful. Later on, when you get a coven of mages, the range stuff. I just like range combat, honestly. I like being able to hit people who can't hit me back.
Yeah. Yep. It's real smart, and having that kind of support, support fire is really very, super helpful.
Yeah.
And super helpful here as well. So if you get past this point in the game, what is the... So this is where you learn where the brigands are hiding.
Yes.
Who have the marquee, which is the Sandrat Siege.
Yes, which sounds like some kind of sexual thing.
Yeah, I gave her the Sandrat Siege.
Yeah, pretty much.
I sieged her up.
Yep, no big deal. But yeah, you find out that you're just on the trail, right? Of where this guy's being held hostage. You get a real cryptic clue. Argath doesn't know what to make of it, but Rams is like, oh, they're talking about sand rats. They're in the desert up north. So you ask, hey, is there a town nearby? Yeah, there's that one. Well, let's go there. And this is a neat fight. It's really hard too.
This is the house, just like the house with the broken walls.
Yes.
With the monks inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's kind of funnels. Mm-hmm. There's two choke points.
Yeah.
In the map, and it's different than several other attacks where you are on the offensive.
Right.
Like, you're not on the inside, they're on the inside. So you do a lot of managing where people can move and things like that.
Yeah.
I like this fight a lot.
Yeah, it's real neat. It's also, I believe, the first fight in the game where you have two parties.
Yeah.
And you start at different parts of the map, which can be helpful, except if you split yourself up, it kind of makes it easier for them to take you out. Whereas if you try to put your guys together, just kind of get that far party over there, Delete is going to do whatever he wants to do.
That's my strategy for this was to let Delita just kind of delay that side of the house and have my, just kind of sacrifice him, be a lost leader.
Yeah.
And then sacrifice himself over there while the rest of my guys turtled up. Because eventually there are classes designed to punish you for not spacing out your guys, but they're a long way off.
Yeah.
So this one, having everybody, having that item as the support ability, being able to heal anybody next to them, and having people kind of turtle up is really useful.
Yeah. Archer is useful, too, because you can arc over that wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're introduced to monks here on the enemy side, and that's my favorite class for the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Monks are really great.
Yeah. So their damage is determined by their physical attack, and it's squared. So, just like other classes, you augment that with a weapon. Monks don't equip weapons. So It's just really just kind of like whatever you have. And they have like really neat little support abilities, including a great one called Aura Blast, which I like a lot, which again, range combat, etc.
The reason why they're so good, I mean, to attack, so like the downfall with them is they can't wear very much in the way of armor, so they never have a lot of hit points, but they do good damage with their fists, and their support set is so strong, because you have that Aura Blast, so you have a range combat, you have a healing and a reviving skill.
Yeah.
Which are both like, I mean, just being able to have all that in one skill set, like it's one of the most powerful support skill sets in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I use that a lot. Like Ramza, who I usually turn into a monk around this point in the game, you know, kind of becomes a principal healer for me, because that chakra skill, you know, heals like a one grid all around him. So if you can surround him with allies, it can heal all of them and heal their MP.
Yeah.
So you know, Aether's at this point, you know. Whether you want to stay a chemist long enough to learn ether and keep yourself supplied with ether is like, who knows, but being able to use Ramza to like recharge my mages was really, you know, a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Send forward my frontline fighters and have Ramza hang back throwing aura blasts and, recharging my mages.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where like Ramza is really, really good as a support player.
Yeah.
I generally almost always play him as that.
Yeah.
Just as DPS, like his secondary ability for me, like through most of the game, is steel, because there are a lot of good weapons and items that you can only get by stealing from certain places, and I have memorized who to get a lot of those from, and there are some fights around the middle of the game that are made a lot easier when you can take somebody's weapon.
Yeah. The success rate for steel is so low that it frustrates me, though.
Yeah, me too.
Like steel is an exercise in frustration, like. Yeah. Especially before you, because it's based on your speed stat, your success. So like until you unlock ninjas and can do a few levels in ninjury to increase your speed, like it gets pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
I don't use steel that often. I don't, like, for me, thieves kind of begin and end at Steel Heart, which is an immensely powerful ability.
Yeah.
That single-handedly, like a lot of the later battles in this part of the game that we're covering were decided by whether Steel Heart would work.
Right.
You know, which is a charm spell that only works on the opposite gender.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome, because you can, you know, deny the enemy one of their troops, gain a troop. So it's a two person swing in your favor, and the enemy has to hurt them to uncharm them. Mm-hmm. So it's win-win no matter what.
Right.
Like that's a great ability. And you see the utility of that ability when it's used against you kind of earlier on, like, and it's infuriating.
Yeah. Like, well, you see that in the next fight.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Which is
the
Brigand's Den. I say in the notes, this is one of my least favorite fights in the game. Mostly because it's really, really hard. Like people say Dordor Slums is a wall. This one in most of my playthroughs is where I get frustrated and put it away.
I don't have that big a problem for this one. And I don't know what it is. Like geographically, it's a little bit annoying. Like the camera in this game, like, God, do I wish that it was not just four, like not just diagonals, but you could also come at things from, you know, the cardinals.
Yeah.
As well, because there's so many times where somebody's behind a building and it's so hard to click on them.
Yeah.
And that's more of a problem because playing it on iOS, if I was controlling the cursor with a D-pad, it'd be a lot easier.
Because you just indirectly do it until you see it highlighted. Yeah.
Yeah. But this way it is kind of frustrating. And this battle is frustrating. It's one of the only battles where, like, you have an alternate win condition where it's not kill everyone, it's just kill Luda. But this is one of the earlier ones where it's feasible to kill everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of times when the game says kill this one person, you need to be focusing fire on that person to the extreme.
Right.
Because the rest of the battle is so deadly that you need to get it over with as soon as possible.
Right.
But this one, if you kind of take your time and don't care if Argath and Delita go off and be idiots and kind of turtle up, like, you can get through this one okay.
Yeah, they put you at a real disadvantage because you start off on this raft down at the bottom of the, like, a boat ramp almost. So you're funneled in unless you have a dude with a high jump. But even then, that leaves you exposed on the left side. On the right side, you have a bunch of these knights that are really problematic. Miluda has double the HP of most other enemies that you've fought at this point. And she's supported not just by thieves who can really outpace you because they have a really high move stat, but by white mages who, you know, normally they're not too huge of a deal, but they have black magic attached to them, and they can hide inside of this building and lob spells at you from the outside. Yep. And, you know, my strategy is always to try and circle around back, get inside that building and take out those mages, because they fuck my shit up on a regular basis if I try and go right after that. And Maluda can just run back and be healed by them no matter what.
Yeah, so. she plays really defensively, where like a lot of times the focus, you know, boss monster character doesn't.
Right.
I always kind of turtle to the right. So I go to that field towards the right and kind of just keep my dudes together. And that tends to be where Delita and Argath go as well. Mm-hmm. So if I'm around them, I'll heal them and keep them alive and just kind of methodically make my way through.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like any video game, I guess, like focusing on one enemy at a time is key.
Yeah.
And, you know, so a thief comes up, stabs one of my guys, and all of my guys counterattack him, you know, so I'm just slowly winning by degrees is kind of how I always take this one.
And this is one of the first like kind of maps in the game, you know, especially if you're like me and you try and clear it, where you can really feel the turning point when it happens. Mm. That's a real rush when that happens, and it feels kind of like ridiculous to say it, but it's very apparent in this game when like that one lucky roll or that one good decision just kind of like, oh, we have them on the run now. You know,
there's a lot of like luck and randomness to this, but it's similar to Dark Souls in that like a lot of times if you do make a mistake, like, you know what you did wrong immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I didn't check the AT meter. I attempted to cast a spell on this guy. He moved right up next to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm killing myself with this, and that's it for the game.
Yeah.
You know, or I was counting on this person who had the item support ability, but they are a secondary ability, but they haven't learned Phoenix Down yet.
Yeah.
So now everybody I have who can bring people back to life is dead.
Yeah.
You know, so then it becomes a frantic race against the clock. Should we talk about that death?
Yeah. That? Especially, you know, since I'm talking about how hard this part of this.
Yeah. And you probably are running into problems at this point, because this is where it's not unreasonable to do a little bit of grinding. And you brought up a really good point when we were kind of talking about the game, because like, I don't like grinding in games. Like, I feel like it's almost always a sign of bad design.
Yeah.
But you brought up the point that like a little bit goes a long way in this game.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend a lot of time doing it to see marked results.
Yeah. When I say grinding it, like two or three extra battles.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not a big deal. Or one extra battle where you spend a lot of time punching each other and drinking potions.
Right.
One drunken night out. we'll do it for your little fat dudes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But if you – so okay. So it's kind of like Dungeons & Dragons, at least 3.0.
God, it's so much like D&D.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much like 3.0. Like, fucking A.
You hit zero HP. And you have a total of three rounds for that character. So their AT meter fills up. When it fills up three times, they die. And there's, you know, 3, 2, 1, 0. So is it four rounds? No, it'd be three. Yeah, three.
Yeah.
And you have that much time to get to them and raise their health, you know, just raise them. So either use raise or a Phoenix Down. I'll just do it once again here for you. Raise. And... I just said that word a lot. And what this does, it kind of creates this weird AI condition where everybody singles that person out. So unless you like go in with a team and you know that there's going to be some kind of rapid succession, you will raise this person and an enemy will attack them, knock them out, and then you'll raise them again. They'll be attacked, knocked out over and over and over again. So
right.
It's
yeah. The enemy always attacks the person they're most likely to kill.
Yes.
So, but even raising them to reset that counter is worthwhile a lot of times.
Yeah, because if they die and that counter gets to zero, they turn into a crystal and are gone forever, along
or
with all
worse, a treasure chest.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah,
they take along all of those hours you put into raising them with them.
Yep, permadeath. Yeah. You know, which everyone's into Fire Emblem right now.
Yeah.
Because of that, but this game also did it, and a much more elegant system than that weird law system thing in Advance. But the what's interesting, so they can turn to a treasure chest, and this goes for enemies too, right?
Yeah.
Non-monster enemies. So a real way to kind of jumpstart your game is if you are able to prolong the battle a little bit, like if an enemy is on a one or zero counter, wait for them to turn to a crystal and grab their abilities.
Yeah,
and you can save yourself, you know, many battles. Like whenever I run into a new mage, you always want to kill mages first, just as a matter of course. And then if they can turn into crystals and you can get your mages to suck up their power, that's awesome. Like you can learn, you know, time magic before, you know, like before you've even switched to that class and start with a head start. It's just really powerful to absorb abilities.
I'm Mega Man.
Yeah, exactly. Like to Mega Man these shits. It is you know, really, really powerful. Yeah. And they turn into a treasure chest, it's probably going to be an Echo Grass and fuck that. you know, totally not worth it. But it does. I like the way the death is handled, where it makes it, you know, when Ramza, and if Ramza gets down to zero, it's game over.
Right.
And it makes it desperate and fun sometimes, where like Ramza goes down, you have the ability to do it, but only if you do these moves in the right order and play, you know, absolute, like play 100% perfect blackjack, you know, to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's one of the better systems. It's also one of the more stressful systems, because I can't abide like one of my minor randoms dying, because you know, fuck that. It'll take less time for me to restart the battle than to raise somebody else to where they are.
Right. if you're planning on using them.
Yeah.
You know, because we'll talk about that later as you start getting in story characters, but you're only at most able to bring in five characters into a battle.
Yeah.
So, and the game gives you a lot more randoms than you'll ever use.
Yeah.
So I sometimes will usually let a random or two die if I know getting one of these, if there's a story character coming along that I know I want to use.
Right.
You know?
Truth. So Meluda, you know, it's become apparent, you know, she's one of the leaders of this corpse brigade, right? And you have her on the run. So your next fight is in Linalian Plateau, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. And it becomes very clear that they think that Teetra is a Beowulf.
Mm-hmm.
And worth the ransom, but nobody can convince them otherwise.
Yeah. This is the part that you were talking about, though, stronger, where it's kind of like a comedy of errors, you know?
Well, it's like the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, exactly.
we want some money, yeah. Lebowski.
Teetra really pulled the room together.
Yeah.
Like, But this is a good fight. This is the first time you run into time mages, right?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the goofiest fucking looking outfits.
They look like mini popes.
Yeah, they do not look like, they look like little Dutch girls. Like they look like Swiss misses, like Mrs. Swiss.
Miss.
Like they should be a time mage on the cover of Hot Chocolate magazine, which is a magazine you should found.
Right now, please. Thanks.
Yeah. Like time mage. Good spokesperson for hot chocolate or best spokesperson for hot chocolate?
Hot chocolate as a concept.
Yeah. To understand hot chocolate, you must understand heat. Heat is the presence of energy. These guys can be, this is another one of these classes, which when you face them, it's really annoying. But when you actually get access to them, there's only a couple abilities you're going to use.
Yeah. It's a great support ability on a different class.
Yeah. But they're so slow as your principal.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
like,
I usually try to have, like, I try to have two mages, like a white mage, time mage that focuses on my guys, and then a black mage, and then sometimes Oracle, sometimes Summoner.
Yeah.
Who focuses on the enemy.
Yeah, I do. I do a chemist with time mage secondary ability, so I can call him a time cop. And the gun.
With the gun?
Yeah.
Who's cannon, Sam?
Yeah. I'm only half kidding. That actually is what I do. Because,
that's awesome.
Because, you know, if a chemist isn't needed, he can run around and help and you know, either do damage or buff people up with haste, or, you know, take pot shots with slow, which can turn the tide of a battle.
So yeah, slow is not bad. Immobilize is really powerful.
Yeah.
Like immobilize trivializes knights, you know, and that's a really, really good ability. They have one of the coolest sounding abilities that never ends up working well for me, which is teleport.
Yeah, I know, right?
And figuring out how teleport worked took me a long time, but that's something where like you can move with 100% accuracy through your normal movement range. So it gives you ignore height and gives you like intangibility, which is really cool and probably worth it in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of go beyond that, but you have a 10% chance of failure every square beyond.
Right.
So it's worth it to, like, you know, can kind of gamble a little bit and get a couple extra moves and ignore height and teleport through walls. It's real cool. It's one of my favorite move abilities to give people.
Yeah. It's neat, you know, and like getting that ability and playing around with it, like made it clear to me how movement worked. So it just that it obviates the need to navigate around obstacles, that's helpful in and of itself.
Yep.
Yeah. especially in some of the more tangled arenas that you find a little bit later. That is a true thing I said. But yeah, Time Mages, I like them a lot in principle. They get some attack abilities that are kind of very dependable. You know, the gravity spells from Final Fantasy that never quite seem to work the way that you would want them to.
They just don't hit. Like, for something that can't kill somebody, it should have a higher percentage of being able to hit.
Yeah.
That's just really frustrating.
They get Meteor, too, right?
Yeah. But Meteor takes, like, 1,000 years to use.
It's basically a summon.
Yeah. And it's even, like, it's as slow as a summon, if not a little bit slower. Like, and I think it can hurt your own guys.
Like
that's
spells.
A big advantage of summons, is that they can't.
Oh, I forgot about that. I forgot that summoners...
Yeah, that's the big thing for summons. That's like their huge advantage is that it picks out, only hurts enemies, only helps allies, and has a huge area of effect.
Yep.
In exchange for being really slow, Time Mages also give you. Just speaking of that, give you the short charge ability, which cuts your casting times in half. So like spending some time as a Time Mage is kind of essential for any caster character you want to make. Mm-hmm. But the time when you are a Time Mage is kind of a drag.
Yeah. But that hat, man. So this is another uphill battle, quite literally. Nothing too remarkable about it, though. Go ahead.
You're forced to kill Maluda.
Yes.
At the end of this, so you try to make her surrender or to talk or to parlay, and she won't do it, and that leads directly into the next battle.
Yes. You find out that she is the brother of Wigriff, which actually. Or not the brother, she's the sister of Wigriff, which kind of telegraphs some of the stuff that's going to come up a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So Wigriff is pissed at you because not only are you of noble blood, but you killed his sister, which really sucks.
Yep. And he, this is a tough like fight. Like he's got these magic sword abilities that you only saw in the intro.
Right.
That Agrius could only do. And area effect abilities that have instant cast time and can also do status effects. Like they're really powerful.
Yeah, and just they break the game a little bit later, and Wigriff is notorious for being a real son of a bitch in this game. I didn't have a whole lot of problem with him in this fight, because like he's kind of bottlenecked, and he's got these knights who are not really that useful. So you have the low ground, like you start out at the bottom of this windmill, and you're working your way up, but you can put some people around it. And, take pot shots, from down there. It's just real easy because he doesn't have a lot of ranged players.
Right. He does have a chocobo on his side, which is, you can see how that's kind of, that can heal, And this is one of the fights where you want to focus fire because the battle ends as soon as you kill Wigriff. He teleports away. Again, for being a mercenary captain, has a lot of magic powers.
I think every plot relevant NPC can teleport.
There's a cutscene later where they entice him to get magic powers. Where is he getting these magic powers that he has? Like we see him get magic powers later.
The plot?
Yeah, plot. He's got plot powers for some reason. Frustrating.
Yeah.
I see. So then you finally continue and he tells you where Teatra is, and you also there's a lot of character development with him before this because he is not happy that they kidnapped Teatra. That was a huge mistake.
Yeah,
and he's saying we don't do this. We're above this. We have more honor. We're no worse than them if we do this. And but his little shitheel sidekick thinks it's going to buy him his freedom.
Right.
And shitheel sidekick runs up to Zeekden Fortress. Mm-hmm. And that's where that little bit we talked about in the plot where Argath shoots their bargaining chip.
Right.
Under the commands of your brother, not your shithead brother, just kind of your formerly nice brother.
Yeah.
He looks a little bit like a frat bro, with his little buzz cut and chub face.
Yep.
he looks like a little bit like a little Buffalo Wild Wings
patron.
Patron, yeah.
Yeah.
He looks like he should be wearing a tap out shirt. Zalbag will make you tap out.
They always keep some ping pong balls behind the corner store counter for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Hey guys, Zalbag's here. Let's party.
Who brought the natty? Yeah.
It's Zalbag.
Man.
But yeah, you have on your notes that you said this fight was not bad. I had a real hard time with this one.
Oh yeah.
This time. Yeah. Argath. So you just had to kill Argath. He's got a crossbow, which is not a big deal, but he has auto potion on. So it's always like 1.5 steps forward, 1 step back whenever you hit him. Because he's going to heal 30 points. It's like having DR in fucking Dungeons & Dragons, which is exactly what this game is. Like, this is the best like Dungeons & Dragons tactics game.
Oh, like, man.
Way better than Dungeons & Dragons Tactics for the PSP. That game was a piece of shit.
Oh, God, that sounds horrible.
It's really bad. Like, it could be good, but it's like playing D&D with the world's worst DM. Ugh. Like, it's really, really bad. But this, it's like he has DR. So, you know, he heals 30 points whenever you do anything to him. And I ended up really having to examine my strategy. Like, I failed a couple times being aggressive and just trying to make everyone target him. And ended up turtling behind the fort where you start out, letting Delita go off and get himself killed. And then letting guys come to us like kind of one at a time and ganging up on them.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I did, honestly, was trying to lure them out while also staying out of range of his his crossbow. The nice thing about like projectiles in this game, just like the archers can arc their bow, you know, their arrows over stuff, potions and guns and crossbows, you have to have line of sight. So if something is blocked or obscured, you have 0% chance to hit. And there's also the idea that like if you try and shoot somebody who's behind somebody else, say like you're shooting for the captor, but you know you hit the hostage instead, it will hit whatever's in front. So it's kind of realistically modeled in a cool way, like that. So you can use that to your advantage.
But yeah, the fight, you know, eventually you were able to kill Argath, and the fight ends as we described. Delita snaps at this point, and this is the big turning point for his character. And presumed dead in the explosion, Teatro's dead, and Ramza, there's, you know, presumably a good amount of time passes.
A year.
That we don't see.
A year passes between each chapter.
Okay, so yeah, a year passes, and you've spent this time as kind of like a, you know, a brigand. Mm-hmm. Or not brigand, a mercenary.
Yeah. And what's cool is his sprite changes from chapter to chapter, and he gets less visibly childish.
Yep. And so does Delita's.
Yeah,
sprite changes as well. So you enter into chapter two, the manipulator and the subservient. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. So just like in chapter one, your first battle of this chapter is some kind of like random city against some random brigands.
The merchant city of Dordor.
Yeah. Except, however, instead of having Delita and Argath on your side, you actually have really useful computer-controlled guest characters, Ingafgarion and Agrius.
Yep. You decide at this, you know, the chapter actually picks up after, you know, the church where, you determine that, Delita, and Agrius obviously wants to go save the princess who has been kidnapped. And Gafgarion accompanies you, even though he says, you know, he's not being paid for it, et cetera. And that will all be important in about 20 or 30 minutes of game time.
Yeah. Depending on how successful you are.
Exactly. Maybe a little bit longer than that.
My play clock says, at the time I got through the chapter, it said about 12 hours, but it was probably closer to 20 because of how much I would get to the end of a battle and I'd just be like, oh, fuck, I died. Time to restart.
It gets kind of frustrating. Like, you invest a lot in failed battles.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not like other RPGs. Like, you know, it's a different genre. You know, it's a tactical RPG. But you know, each battle in the best of circumstances takes about 20 minutes.
Right.
15, 20 minutes. Yeah.
So Agrius and Gafgarion are both very useful. They both have these kind of distant sword abilities. Gafgarion's just kind of a drain HP. And Agrius's that can cause stop sometimes. And if it does happen to cause stop, then congratulations. Like, you're probably going to win that battle.
Yeah.
Like, if she can knock somebody out of the battle for 4 or 5 rounds.
Yeah.
The kind of like lore at this point, there's a shadowy figure who will become important later, who's offering a thief money to kill you at this point. And he kind of comes up later. But at this point, it seems kind of arbitrary.
Right.
Something I wanted to bring up, though, when you come up the hill, the thief kind of like takes off his hat and throws it down. There's so much like little character animations.
Yeah, that was a note game that I had.
They're wonderful.
Yep.
Like, it's great. Like, it looks so good. Like, the sprite work is really good. There's so many unique little animations for every character. It just has tons of personality.
Like, the in-game fight cinematics, like I'm talking about the cinemas that are done in-engine.
Yep.
They have all these little poses that are mm-hmm. done, and it's really just like there are more frames of them than you would think. So like the idea of like grabbing somebody by the collar and then throwing them across the room, like that's rendered in a way that isn't laughable.
Right. Which, right. And compare it to something like, you know, because this, you know, a lot of people, like I said myself, bought this on the heels of Final Fantasy VII, which like had more animation because everybody was a big pile of Doritos, but didn't look nearly as good as this.
Right.
You know, in that respect. Like, I like Final Fantasy VII, but this game looks like the presentation is just when you're not trying to do the most advanced thing in and technologically possible, you know, and you choose an artful style of things, you're going to get better results.
Right.
And it's almost always true.
And you know? There's something to be said for the visual design on this and how they constricted the color palette the mm-hmm. way that they did. It just looks beautiful, and they only use like half tones of pretty much everything.
Yep.
And when there are splashes of color, they really, really stick out.
Yep. I love that. I love that little scene with like the little thief throwing down his hat. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Well, shit, forgot Garion, I got ripped off. You know, I'm gonna die. Welcome to the jungle, thief.
You're gonna die.
Welcome to Dorda City. City of merchants now.
We got thieves and knives.
Yeah, we got thieves and knives. But
if
yeah.
you got the gill, honey. Sorry.
This battle is pretty easy, though. It's kind of like just kind of ramping you in.
Yeah.
To this, you know.
Yeah. It's weird. I forgot / didn't realize that they would set Ramza back to be a squire after this.
Mm.
So I spent the next couple of battles wondering why I didn't have access to my stuff.
Mm.
I should have paid closer attention. That's bad on me. But.
Ramza Squire is better than regular Squire. Anyway.
Yeah, Ramza Squire has special abilities.
Yeah,
yeah,
that are all pretty useful, like really good support. Like he is kind of built. That's kind of a nice little intersection of gameplay and story, though. Like the way that this isn't really his story,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of and the way that he's you know he's kind of keyed up to be a support player from the beginning, like given his moveset.
Yeah,
his like natural moveset. Like you can make anybody into anything you want in this game, mm-hmm. but yeah, he kind of lends himself well to that.
Yeah. And in terms of story, he never actually rises beyond the rank of a squire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I could see some insane person, a couple of years ago, maybe for YouTube or something, doing like a just Ramza, just squire run.
Yeah. There's a lot of challenge runs and stuff that come from this game.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all mathematician runs and stuff like that. It's a game that's like, you have to wonder if they intended that. I know that that's a stupid thing to speculate about, but
I don't know if they intended necessarily the challenge runs, but they intended the kind of breath that allows them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So this fight, you know, no great shakes, fairly easy. The next fight also pretty easy, but introduces like kind of a cool bit where it's another one of those choice battles where like you find a Chocobo in the woods and you can either save him from monsters or, you know, just try to kill the monsters.
Yeah.
And you get Boko.
Yeah, who is the mascot Chocobo from most Final Fantasy games. And interestingly, this is Wheatgriff's Chocobo.
How is that true? How do you know that?
I remember reading it in one of the guides that I've read. So his Chocobo is named Boko. Like if you look at status on him. And,
is he a traitor?
I think that Wheatgriff abandons him, actually. Which is real sad. Have you, after doing a bunch of errands, for some reason, I had a bunch of chocobos cluttering up my ranks. So I had to go and dismiss them. The regular dismissal messages for dudes, they're not that bad. Like, oh god, where will I go? Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know.
Not my problem. But when you're 18, you're out of the house.
But for the
Brad.
But for the chocobos, it's like it looks confused. You say to go home, but you have, but it has no home to go to, and it's like, oh god!
I love that so much.
It seems to want to stay. It's like Jesus.
I added to our Facebook, but like, there's a certain part of Final Fantasy Tactics where you just become a chocobo egg abortionist, where it's just your duty because these things like interbreed with themselves, like disgusting. Like when you get Boko, Boko is pregnant with something, right? So Boko lays an egg, gives birth to a chocobo. They mate. This incestuous union creates just limitless eggs. Like the longer you spend, the more chocobos you're going to get.
Yeah.
And it's just disgusting. This like just interbreathing hive, like it's positively Yoshian. Like it's repulsive. And the you know, and so yeah, I'm constantly having to go into my inventory to destroy their children in front of them, like you know, just smashing. Like just I just imagine Ramza and crew and like Agrius just enjoying like the world's biggest fucking omelet, you know, every in the morning before battle.
Just season it with some echo grass, you know.
Yeah, yeah. This remedy sure is spicy.
Mm-hmm. But that is the case. Also, if you kill Wigriff's Chocobo in his battle, it doesn't put up the death count. It just does the normal the guest little spark above him.
Well, that makes me hate Wigriff even more.
I know, right?
It ended like getting this guy. This guy became my so I only had four party members that I was using, you know, that were any good because all my other guys that they started me out with had really shitty Faith and Brave. So on battles where I could bring in five people, I'd bring in Boko after I saved him. And it introduces this whole mounted combat thing, which like the game really underutilizes. Again, one of these like weird little neat details that you're not going to use very much.
Yeah. The chief advantages of mounted combat, greater mobility, one. But aren't you also immune to status effects?
I don't
when
know.
Up there? That is the case from what I've read.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty neat. You know, that range thing, I mean, you end up having like a move of like eight or something,
yeah,
which is enough to cover almost all the battlefield. So it's really useful. And having him in the party is useful as well. Like he can attack and heal, so he has some utility. There's a whole side to this game about recruiting monsters and stuff too. Again, just like a system with tons of depth that you don't really need to or want to spend very much time with.
Yeah.
In the game,
do you have to have a mediator or an orator? I'm going to mix up the classes.
Yeah,
between the two versions, do you have to have a mediator to get monsters in?
It's an ability called Tame.
Okay.
I think when you kill a monster, when you have Tame, it mm-hmm. joins you.
Yeah,
is how that works. I think you can also invite them.
Okay.
Like the in capital I invite, which is like the mediator ability.
Right. There's also Poach, which gets you items for killing monsters.
And a really weird ability called Monster Talk, which like yeah. Monster Talk, if a character has – the best I understand it, if a character has Monster Talk and he's near a monster on your team, that monster will be able to use like a secret ability. Like real weird. There's so much weird little depth to this game.
Yeah.
And it's totally – like I love the freedom of it. So like if you want to play as Ramza and a group of monsters – totally viable, and you'll find like monsters that are good enough to make you easily carry you through the game.
Yeah,
you know, eventually you start recruiting dragons and fucking hydras and shit.
Yeah,
and you'll be a-okay. You know,
that's more tenable in the War of the Lions remake because they increase your party roster size.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right. So you don't have to like dismiss Agrius to recruit a you know a red chocobo.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty neat. And for this playthrough, I'm not planning on doing any monster training. And I've only done a little bit of it in the past with one NPC that you get in the second half of the game that we'll talk about then.
Yeah.
That lends herself really well to it. But you know, this is the first monster NPC you can get.
Yeah. And the success of a lot of those skills, you know, most of the skills in the game actually are determined by another obscure system, the Zodiac compatibility system.
Yeah, I was just about to talk about that. So I wonder if you're the same as me, and I kind of imagine you are. So I realize that I'm always honest with my birthday
uh-huh.
in the beginning. So I'm getting a real similar experience every time I play. Mm-hmm. But if I were to change that, I would like certain battles that are easy for me would be more difficult because Ramza would be weaker against those things
right.
or stronger. But I can't not put in my birthday.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm the same way.
Yeah, it just feels wrong to not make Ramza a little Virgo.
Yeah,
and thus you know I can't remember if the affinity if it's you're stronger against things that are your sign or weaker.
You know, I've never looked into it too much. For as much as I like this game and for as much as I've played it, like my interest in those in like that side of things kind of tends to stop at the Brave and Faith a little bit, just because I don't want to memorize those tables of what's strong against what.
I feel like I have looked into it in the past, but I can't remember it now.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to how much, you know, optional depth. There's the game that, yeah. like, I've played it several times without even thinking about it, and it's fine.
But, Yeah, but it's a thing, and that's really all that you need to know. If you want to min-max it, I'm sure there's a table or some kind of spreadsheet you can look at.
Yeah.
But yeah. My little Rams is a Scorpio, just walking around being mysterious and sexy.
Nothing more mysterious and sexy than a Ramza. Little toe-headed, like naive moppet.
Just walking around with a big old lolly.
Yep. like a little Dutch boy.
Dutch boys and Swiss misses.
I like this next map a whole lot.
Yep.
Zyrechel.
Zyrechel Falls.
Zyrechel Falls.
Yes.
I like that a lot. Because not only because of the plot where Delita comes back in, or you catch up to Delita.
Yeah.
He's kidnapped the princess, and he's been cornered by the Knights of the Northern Sky.
Yeah.
I think. Is that the unit?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's nice to reintroduce him, but it's also really geographically interesting, and you're protecting an NPC who can actually take care of herself.
Yeah.
Like, Ovelia is pretty hardy in all the battles where you have to protect her. It's not like an escort mission.
It's not. She's like her skill set is entirely geared around protecting herself. She has a skill called Aegis, which puts up, I believe, protect and shell on her, and she will run away.
And regen and re-raise.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and I think haste. Like it's awesome. Like she just kind of becomes a tank.
Yeah.
And she actually has like a self-preservation instinct. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, definitely the topography of this is interesting, and I really like any random encounters that happen in this in this one, to the point where I will walk across it intentionally if I'm grinding, because it tends to make stuff interesting. It's complicated because you have this bridge and the system for choosing which elevation you're going to attack if there's an option. Really kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's clumsy.
Yeah, but it's neat because there are like four or five different levels to it.
More importantly to this is when Gafgarion betrays you.
Yes.
And if you know it's coming, you can strip all his equipment and make him a white mage with no spells. Which I usually do.
Yeah.
Because fuck that guy. I want his sword.
His sword is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you do that, see, I know that you can do that, but if you do that, are you kept from getting his weapons later if you try and steal from him?
Because no, he re-equips.
Okay.
Like he actually comes up, he's equipped better every successive time you see him.
Yeah, and I like those swords a lot. So I always, out of superstition, I guess, leave him equipped so I can take them from him later on, which makes my life harder, I'm finding.
Yeah, this battle is tough, and trying to steal from him is tough.
But this is real interesting because you have a couple of different things going on. So you've got Gafgarion, you have these Knights of the Northern Sky, and then don't you have Delita's crew as well?
There's just Delita.
Okay, there's just Delita. Man, and my memory is shit. Is he on your side? Is he fighting for you, or are you fighting
against him? He's on your side, and he can more or less take care of the other side of the bridge.
Yeah.
Like, he's got his super knight sword abilities.
Yeah.
You know, somebody gave him powers as well, plot powers. And it's not somebody, you know, who gave him powers.
Yeah.
But the he's able to pretty much take care of that side of the things. So it's an easy battle if you've de-equipped Gafgarion.
Yeah.
Gafgarion makes battles tough, though. So if he's still...
He is a real son of a bitch.
Yep.
Yeah. next battle, Zaland.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really interesting fight. This is where you get Mustadio, and he's up there. He can kind of take care of himself, but it's another choice battle where you can make his death a lose condition.
Mm-hmm.
You start out. It's divided by a wall, and you have to kind of climb up this hill path to get up there. And there's this city on the other side. For me, it was a real learning moment the first time that I played, because I was real gung-ho about going in, but just like you are a sitting duck as you try and go through this one little doorway. There are lots of archers on this other side. There are knights,
mages,
yeah. And they can all hit you from the other side of this wall. So it really behooves you to, like, kind of let Mustadio be up there. Maybe send a chemist who can potion him, maybe. but to really draw them out over that right side of the wall. Because the knights are going to come after you. You just have to hope they don't go after Mustadio. But, you know, you can clean that mess up a little bit.
This was a battle that reminded me or taught me for this playthrough that enemy abilities are rolled up every time you die. Because the first time I had a really hard time with it. I was trying to kill the mages first, which is always my way. And my characters had decent jump, and I had several ranged attackers, so I could just go up to the wall and attack people at, you know, on the other side. But everyone had Phoenix Downs.
Yeah.
Like every enemy could use items. So every time I killed a mage, they would get revived and healed on the enemy's next turn.
Yeah.
So I ended up dying because of this. And then I played again, you know, all the knights had Throw Rock as their support ability, and it was no problem.
Yeah.
So there's that element of chance. I love Mustadio. Like, he's one of the most, like, when you get him, he's so useful. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's, like, one of the best utility characters in the game, I think.
Yeah.
Like, being able to put someone out of the action is so powerful, like, even if you're not actually hurting them. So he has a special skill set that only he has that's arm aim and leg aim.
Yep.
That either lets him add don't act or immobilize to people. Mm-hmm. And if you do don't move to a knight, or if you do don't act to anyone, it more or less just makes them useless for three or four turns, and you can concentrate on other people.
Yeah. So he's what a knight should be.
yeah, exactly. And he doesn't have to get all up in it. You know, he can do it from across the map.
Yeah.
So he's never going to be like a great damage dealer, but he's awesome as a defense, because a chemist can also use a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, once you get him, eventually you switch him to a chemist. You have this awesome person to stay back behind your lines, heal all your guys, and take pot shots and immobilize people.
Yeah.
Like, I always kind of cherry pick, you know, just immobilize whoever I have the highest percentage of success.
Yeah.
Just kind of go from person to person.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely. This begins the cascading irrelevance of generics.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have Agrius, you know, in your party, and, you know, okay, so she is auto control at this point, but later on, when she stops being plot relevant and you can control her, she has like 250 HP.
Yeah.
Like something ridiculous like that. Mustadio is not that far behind her once he becomes controllable. And eventually your party can entirely be story relevant characters.
Yeah. The only thing that, and I realize it in this playthrough, is that you don't get casters through the plot.
Right.
Like, you never get people who are starting out good at magic. Like, you can turn Agrius into a mage, and it kind of makes sense to do so, if I remember. But everyone kind of, you start out with swordsmen and utility people. You don't start out with casters. So I usually keep my casters. And I think for this playthrough, I'm kind of trying to do a balance where it's like, you know, Ramza and two mages, you know, like an offensive and a defensive mage. And then my other two slots will be with whatever story characters I like the best
right
at the time. So,
yeah. So it's an interesting fight. You know, it kind of continues from Xerxil with that weird topography. Mustadio, he's Mr. Exposition.
Mm-hmm.
In terms
yeah.
of this mystic side of the story, ancient technology that has been lost to man is always really interesting to me. And
mm-hmm.
the idea that there's this whole city that underneath it is, you know, these machines that activate when stones get near them. It's like, oh, yeah.
I wanted to see that so bad. Like, when eventually you see the clockwork city of Gog, though, it's just like a normal city with some propellers on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like, it's like that Simpsons where, Homer designs the power plant. He just adds the racing stripes and fins to it. Like, it's exactly like that. Like, Gog just has some propellers. It's not a clockwork city. There's no cool underground anything.
I know.
Like,
right?
Then you don't get to see any of that. I really wanted to fight in this underground complex. Like,
yeah.
That would have been really cool.
But it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
He
God
won't,
damn it.
He won't tell you why these people are trying to kill him, which makes it real suspicious that you would accept him into your fold. In fact, I forget what their exact motivation was for it, aside from, like, hey, you look like you could use some help.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really it. I think, no, well, they're going to – he just wants to come along because they're going to Count Delacroix.
Yep.
And he says, I'm going there as well. Can I accompany you? And they're just doing it out of kindness. But so quick on the heels of Gafgarion betraying you, like, they are very trusting.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Which is fine because, you know, Mustadio's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Good trust.
Weird haircut. But
Yeah, weird haircut. I like how his father looks.
Yeah, his
father. He looks like how I'd imagine Mustadio's dad would look.
Yeah. I love the conversation sprites in the game. They have kind of this concept art feel to it.
They're interesting because they're definitely anime, but it's an anime with a more unique voice.
Yeah.
Than a lot of things. Like, they're kind of this, like, soft, like, noseless, you know, kind of creature. Like, I really like it too. Like, this is, you know, like, the path you know, if anime is ever going to get into my heart, it's going to go through like paths similar to this. Like this game does anime stylings better than, you know, just about anything.
Right.
As somebody, I mean, coming from a perspective of somebody who like does not like anime, like this looks good and it has the right tone. It's not over the top. Not, you know, everyone's, we were talking a little bit off mic in the beginning about the cutscenes and everything. And the cutscenes in the remake, not only are they beautiful, like they just, you know, they look like they're this colored pencil style. It's really aesthetically pleasing, but they don't happen when like you're killing a monster or doing a battle. Like you never really see people fight. It's just people talking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just dialogue. It's done in this scene. It's not, you know, people with huge hair flying through the air for several moments too long, like delivering exposition before slamming down a lightning sword. And, you know, and like, I hate that shit, you know, like it's really annoying. It doesn't feel cool to me, but this, like, it has a sense of restraint that, you know, that anime doesn't tend to have that I really like.
Agreed. Yeah, I like this because functionally it works really well inside the game. Like you can tell that artistic voice kind of came through. For as much as I like the art that Amano does, like earlier on in the series, and then like I think he did like 10 as well. I think he did 9 too. But if you look at that concept art, it's really wispy and it's really kind of like ethereal. Like, and if they tried to like put that into the game, like it wouldn't have worked the way it did. So they just kind of took the proportions and the inspiration from it. This kind of looks like he could have drawn it right into the game and it would have worked.
Yeah.
Really, really well.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So really neat. I like that a lot. The sprites have a lot of character. It gives you a lot of sense for their voice. It's cool. So you leave Zaland and you enter a fight in probably what I think is one of the weirdest maps in the game.
The gigantic hill?
Plateau, Balias Tor, which is also the first appearance of summoners.
Yeah, yeah. Who can fuck your shit? So like when we were talking about the class designed to punish you for grouping your guys together, that's definitely summoners.
Yeah.
So you know, this is where the game is teaching you like their advantages to staying together and their advantages to spreading out your guys.
Yeah.
Enemy summoners are always much more effective than my summoners are.
Yeah.
Like I'll usually spend some time as a summoner mostly to get Golem. Mm-hmm. Like Golem is one of the best support spells in the game.
Right.
And will win battles for you. If you take the time to learn it. But the time, you know, they're so slow and they're so slow to act and spell. They're too slow to go off.
Yeah.
So it has to be worth it.
Yeah. So it really, really, you know, benefits you to, you know, make sure that you have them kind of bottlenecked or trapped before you lay it down. And if you're trying to do a support spell on yourself, to make sure that you don't have any need to move from that while this is waiting to fire off. So,
well, Golem affects all of your guys on the map.
Does it?
No matter where they're at.
I forgot about that. I haven't used a summoner yet this playthrough.
Oh, get Golem, dude. Yeah. Like if you're having a hard time with battles where the enemies are at all physical, like Golem is a battle changer. Like it's incredible.
Yeah. This is just such a crazy fight though, because they're holed up on the top of this thing and they can just rain holy terror down on you. they're one of the few enemies who one of the few classes really that excel really well at both attack and support. Mm-hmm. So, you know, any damage that you can do to them on the way up to actually be able to get into the shit, they can just wipe away with Moogle charm.
Yep. Do you remember, were you really disappointed with the summon animations for this? Like, I came from this from Final Fantasy VII, where they were really impressive. And I remember, like, just, like, being disgusted when I first got summoners. Like, I was expecting cool, like, cutscenes for them. And they're just, like, a paper doll that just kind of floats in front of the camera for a little bit with some particle effects.
Yeah, they just kind of hover around. I was expecting this this gigantic thing with big hair that would give some exposition before it stayed in the air for a little bit too long and landed with a thunder sword. And I got paper. Sorry. No, you're right. I was disgusted because the flashbang whiz pow of those, something, you know, like I knew people who played Final Fantasy VII just for those animations, almost, right? Mm-hmm. So and I wasn't one of those people, but I really appreciated it. And I saw Summoner, awesome, great. And I should have known because I came to it from Final Fantasy IV as well. And you know the summons and those are no great shakes. They're just big sprites that do that do attacks. And this is more in that line. But once you saw the Final Fantasy VII summons, there is no going back. Final Fantasy VIII definitely went a long way to repent for these sins.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, they're just like little stories. Like, they're not so animu. They're just like little, like,
I know.
You know, the character shows up. No, you're right. I mean, you know, it's a thing. But yeah, I was real impressed with those ones, and not so much with these. Yeah, it's a weird battle. And it's kind of one of the ones, like one of these like mandatory but not story based.
Right.
Battles.
Just something happened on the way to the forum.
Same thing with the next one.
Yep.
Yeah, the Tichigolith.
Chigolith Fenlins.
Yeah. It just introduces the undead.
Yep.
You know, that they're undead. They'll revive after a time after you kill them.
Yeah.
But it's not even a tough battle. And you get Mustadio, who has an ability to petrify undead.
Yeah.
So,
and it's funny because walking through swamps doesn't poison you, but stopping in swamps does.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. Like, yeah. You know, you just can't spend very much time in there.
Leeches. Yeah.
White town.
But, you're on this path because you're sent from this, from Lionel Castle, right? So you stop at the, I think I'm getting this right. You're on the way to Gauglowtown. But you stop at Lionel, you talk with the Cardinal, he's like, yeah, you know, Mustadio, you're being hunted down by by this trading company that's actually, brigands and mercenaries. We'll try and put a stop to that. You know, we'll send an advance guard to Gaug to clear them out so you can get back home. And he's like, great, awesome. So, Ramza decides to leave Ovelia at the, at there because she's supposed to be safe. And he says, well, I'll accompany your dudes so they can, help, clear them out. You get to Gaug and they're still there.
Yeah.
they haven't been cleared out. And in fact, they are holding Mustadio's dad hostage in exchange for the stone.
Right. And they drop hints that they've been working with the Cardinal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the jig is up with that.
Yeah. So, I like this battlefield. It's real neat, mm-hmm. especially that cathedral that's kind of like sitting at a 45-degree angle jutting out of the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the ones where you can't, since this is a city, you can't do random encounters on it.
Right.
So this is the only time you're going to see this.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fun. It's another battle where you're fighting thieves. So that steel heart ability is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
If they can use that on you. But other than that, it's, thieves and summoners.
Yeah,
my favorite Clash song, and so after you beat them, so Mustadio does kind of a double cross on the brigands, and gives them a fake stone.
Yeah,
which is cool.
Yeah, he prepared one. You know, he's thinking a couple moves ahead. He's like Batman in that way.
Right, but then we realize, oh, we left the princess with this asshole.
No. Well, he had no way of knowing that.
Right,
so
right.
like he was acting in his own self-interest. It's kind of like, okay, cool, yeah, great, you saved your dad, you have the aura sight, now we have to rush back. We can't go in a we can't go directly, so we're gonna have to take the boat to Baron, right? Because Baron mm-hmm. has the really good airships. In one of the longest like map animations, you have to
and you get a little cutscene where you run into Delita again when you get to the port city of Wyjus,
something like that.
Something like that. And Delita tells you, turn back, while you still can. And you should not pursue this. But still doesn't really drop any hints as to who he's working for.
Yeah. This bothers me because there's no warning at this point that you're going to be cut off from the rest of the world. There's only one leveling area after this. Also, I had left some of my dudes to do errands before I came here for forgetting that was the case. Not important dudes, just, some random mooks that I had, just to send out there and get me some money. Right. But now they were cut off from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't done. I did stuff with errands in other playthroughs, and this one I'm not really touching it because I'm keeping my party svelte.
Yeah, I just keep a B crew to go do those. Mm,
Yeah, they're kind of good for like that little bit. The part of you that reads all the item descriptions in Dragon Age, probably appreciates those because you can get those artifacts that tell a little bit of the story, the backstory of the world.
Yeah,
from doing those.
Mm-hmm. That's real neat. But you leave from there to another kind of weird area, the Balia Swale, which is another just so much cool topography in this chapter. You find Agrius. She has escaped Lionel. And I forget, like, she's just running away, and you find her. Like, we need to go save Lavelia.
Right. Yeah, she escaped.
Yeah.
And they're, I guess they're hunting her down is what I would guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's not very much story significance to it, but it's kind of interesting because you split your party, and if you don't know how you're splitting your party, it can be pretty tough.
Yeah. So you have two that are on the right side, and they're going after a black mage and an archer who are making life difficult for the people on the left side. However, you want to have a healer on the left side, or you know, somebody, you know, a chemist, something like that, because you are trying to protect Agrius. So if she falls, that's game over for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's neat. This area is kind of a son of a bitch to do random encounters in, because most of them have an archer in there who will immediately flee to the other side and just like make life hell for you. And if somebody dies on the other side, you better damn well hope somebody has a Phoenix down over there, or else it sucks. And this is the only random encounter area if you need to grind up for the fights against Gafgarion.
And you very well may, because like this next fight is a huge stopping point.
Yeah.
This is real tough.
The Gogolata Gallows.
Yeah. Kind of a cool like little cinematic, beginning with it. Like they dress up an archer as the princess.
Yeah.
And they're going to hang her, and it turns out to be a trap for you. But this fight took me many tries. Like, this is hard.
It's so hard.
You're outnumbered by a significant amount. I think like three guys. I think they have 8 or 9 people, and you come in with 6.
Yes.
So, and they have a huge tactical advantage. Like, they have a knight and 2 time mages up on top of this kind of a bridge or gate up in the sky, being able to kind of rain down spells on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is real tricky.
Yeah, it really benefits you, since there are no summoners, to get those 2 stragglers as close to the other people as possible.
Yeah.
And my strategy is always to send Ramza to try and steal Gafgarion's weapon, because without that, he's useless.
Right.
And trying to take him out, you know, if you leave people down there to try and kill him, they will just be just obliterated by the archers and the knights. So it benefits you to neuter him as quickly as possible, get up to the top of the archway, and take them out one by one as they try and come up.
And his weapon heals him as well.
Yeah.
So his ability. So like he's always going to kind of regenerate. I did something very similar to that, but I didn't steal his weapon. So I tried to get everyone together as soon as possible, got on top of the archway, and then it was all about the success of, don't act. So if I could don't act Gafgarion, that would be good. And then having Ramza charm one of the time mages, steal her heart. And that makes a big difference, because then she's hasting all my guys. She immobilized the knight in the middle. Like, she did a lot of the winning of this battle for me.
Right.
In my successful run. But getting everyone up on top of that arch is key.
Yeah.
And getting yourself in a defensible position. And you start out really far away from it, and with your guys separated, it's really tricky.
Yeah.
Everyone will make a beeline for your casters at this point. The knights and Gafgarion, got my summoner down to 10 hit points.
Jeez.
Before she took a turn. So,
Yeah. It just, you cannot underestimate just how devastating being outnumbered is. Even one other person, that they would have over you is, it's a huge deal.
Which is why charm is
so
like amazing in this game. Mm-hmm. Like, charm is a huge ability.
Yeah. The battle after this isn't really that different than this one in a lot of regards.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like
how did Ramza get up there?
I don't know.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, however he got in there, everybody else, get in there.
Exactly.
Like he got in at night or something? Like, how is he on the other side of the wall? It's real weird.
Well, he had the plot teleport spell, but it came it left him as soon as the camera hit him.
It came loose, yeah.
Yeah, it just floated off into the ether, yes. So you have Ramza and Gafgarion on one side of this wall in like a dueling battle, and Ramza, he's really outclassed because Gafgarion, his whole tactic is to get far enough away from you that you can't move to him very easily, but he can hit you with his fell sword stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
even without those tactics, he's healing and attacking in the same round.
Yeah.
So you have the same problem you have with like Parasite Eve or any single player RPG where you need to be able to do both.
Yeah.
Or single character RPG rather. So he's, and Gafgarion is playing an idealized version of that, and you can do one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I just, I, I, I wish, and this would change the entire dynamic of the game, but if there was some kind of ability or some kind of option to sacrifice your move for another for another command, it would be a different game at that point. But
yeah, it'd be Dungeons and Dragons.
yeah.
I think you can only trade down, though. I think you can actually, in Dungeons and Dragons, you can only do two moves.
Yeah, two moves. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can open
which would also be useful in this.
Yes. So. You can open up the door. It would be useful because it would get you to the switch to open the castle gates to turn it into one big battlefield. But the rest of your party has a lot to deal with on the other side, too, because they're fighting against, I believe, dragoons make their first appearance here.
No, okay, it's two knights, two archers, and a summoner.
Okay.
Yeah. I just played that earlier this morning, so I'm running slow. And this was one of those things where the abilities, the secondary abilities being randomly rolled, really kind of fucked me over with this battle, because one of the knights and one of the archers both had geomancy.
So
geomancy, we haven't talked about geomancers.
No.
They're kind of, I kind of like geomancers.
Me too.
Yeah, they're a good class, like a above average warrior, and has a secondary ability to do like kind of a low amount of damage, but over a large portion of the map.
Yeah,
and a chance to inflict status.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good secondary support skill.
Yeah,
like you can almost always use it. So whenever you get to the end of your turn and there's nobody in range, you can almost always use geomancy.
Yeah, that's like, it's like the next step beyond using the aura blast for the monk. It's just kind of I need a low damage way to hit somebody who's just out of reach, because you often find yourself in these situations where you can just barely move to get within attack range, and to be able to kind of close that margin does a lot for you.
And if the status effect fires, you know, double gravy.
Yep.
Like some of them like turn them to stone. There are some instant death ones. Like some of them are very powerful.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty cheap to learn too. Like, yeah, there's an ability for every land you're standing on, but they're all pretty cheap.
Yeah. So some of the descriptions of like what fires on what are kind of crazy, like outcroppings and basalt.
Yeah.
Like so I'm supposed to identify basalt from a sprite.
Yeah. And taste it.
But this is a son of a bitch of a fight.
Yeah, this is tough. And the biggest thing is like getting your party together and getting them turtled up and taking care of that summoner is what you need to do. And then you can, what I usually do is open up the gate and then have my party withdraw past the gate.
Okay.
And try to deal with Gafgarion before everyone catches up.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. It doesn't always work because those other guys are encroaching.
Yeah.
But this is other than the summoner, like they don't have any other casters, except for the first time I tried it and died where they had two geomancers.
Yeah.
If you can kill that caster, then there's no reason not to have your characters right next to each other so they can shore each other up.
Right.
It's also a really good battle for Golem and Protect. Like, Protect is one of those support spells I'm finding a lot of use for in this playthrough that I hadn't previously. And because almost everyone does physical damage, like, you can make a big difference getting a few of your guys under Protect.
Yeah, Protect is like haste, honestly, and that's why the White Mage, Time Mage combo works really well. So if you start out the map and you just kind of turtle up for a turn or two and get as many people hasted or protected as possible, if it hits... Then you can start off on a really good foot, and those two, you can make up for those two turns with the four or five turns of haste and protect that you have.
Honestly, with the way that the Zodiac compatibility works, if like you have a support character and they're missing consistently against guys you want to keep in your team, consider getting rid of them or changing their roles.
Yeah.
Because it's going to stay the same. Like if they are getting 60% success rates with protect against someone, they're always going to have that unless somebody's faith changes. Mm-hmm. So it is, you're going to want to reevaluate that.
Yeah.
And it's random. Like what, people's birthdays are random in this game. So it's pretty, again, it's kind of like a die roll thing. For this game is like a mix between things that are like 100% random and things you have an insane amount of control over.
Yeah. The blackjack analogy actually isn't that off, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you can play perfect blackjack. It's the same way I talk about it all the time when Isaac Let's Plays.
Yeah.
Like it's just stacking your advantages and maximizing the things you have control over.
Right.
And that's how you succeed at Isaac and I guess everything.
Yeah.
You know. So
kind of the story bits here, Ovelia is being kept in the basement. You find out kind of like a really big thing. She's not the actual princess.
Yeah. This is maybe the first twist that I'm not, I feel like is kind of like twist upon twist upon twist.
Yeah.
In a game with that series, fucking does the twist like Chubby Checker on goddamn, you know, Adraphanil, like, all night, again and again and again.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
Like, it just, you know, this game does the twist.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just a little bit like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. I mean, that's fine. It's neat.
Yeah. But it's in line with, like, the whole succession battle kind of thing, right? Like,
yeah.
It's still in the character of, like, huh. So, yeah, all right, gotcha. It's political manipulation, you know, and it's just, like, the way that these, you know, the machinery of the society works just picks somebody and grinds them down and turns them into an object.
Right.
You know, so I could get behind this one.
I can get behind it, but it's also a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it also feels like, I mean, it's just, they're just, you know, adding plots while resolving none. And it's kind of, and it continues, it's just kind of like a plot pileup kind of thing a little bit. So I can get behind it. Ultimately, what happens with it, I'm into, you know, the intrigue stuff.
Yeah.
I agree that it's stronger, but the, it's just, it's adding a lot of complexity to the plot.
Yeah.
At this point.
But it's become apparent that Delita is working for, if not the church, then at least this cardinal, right?
Right.
And
right.
He is told to escort her to Zaltenia in order to, you know, keep her safe for either mm-hmm. the white or black line. I forget.
Yeah. Or both. I mean, they both. Yeah.
So and that leads into. So was this second? Well, like, was this Return to Zerstreo Falls? Was that in the first game? Because I was playing
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So there's some story with, you know, kind of like, you know, like cementing Delita and Ovelia's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this cinematic battle more than anything, really, of Delita defending her from people who are coming after her, right?
Right. And it's like an interactive cutscene.
Yeah.
More than anything. And it was not in the original version.
Yeah. Delita just steamrolls them with his crazy magic knight abilities. Yeah. And then that gets to the, go ahead.
Or I was just going to take us into the next.
Oh, that's next what I was going to do. Hey, buddy.
Oh, yeah. It's almost as if we're reading from a common set of notes. then it gets us into the first big, like, boss fight of the game.
Yeah.
Which would ultimately be like a big turning point. You know, the supernatural is in. You confront the cardinal, and he turns into Quicklein?
Kuklon.
He joins the Ku Klan clan and becomes the Oogie Boogie Man from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. Or he's kind of like those Isaac monsters that attack you by like goatseeing their stomach.
Yeah, like a gluttony.
Yeah,
like exactly. Like their little goat, he turns into a goatsey monster, essentially. In kind of a weird like story beat. Like, I mean, we talked about it a lot, but I don't, you know, the fact that you're fighting like Eldritch monstrosities in this game. It, you know, the depth like, or the like nuance become like kind of goes through the floor because they know they just want power at all cost, which is mm-hmm. not that interesting.
Right.
Whereas power at some cost is interesting. And the they're just, you know, they're willing to make any kind of moral or spiritual compromise in pursuit of this kind of abstract idea of power.
Yeah.
You know,
and like at a certain point, it stops being that they want it. Like it was just their demons that let these actual demons in.
Right.
So it becomes possession, which isn't as interesting as like a flawed person making bad decisions.
Right. Like a force of evil is never going to be like, even Satan himself is interesting only when he's personified as like a person.
Right.
Like Satan, you know, like the little red guy with a pitchfork, like, you know, not very scary, you know, but like a Lucifer figure or something
like Milton,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And this game kind of switches from, you know, even a corrupt church.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. But yeah. A corrupt church that's made, like, deals with demons. And this is, a, you know, a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft, where it's all mm-hmm. about churches making deals with, like, otherworldly things. But it's not, you know, they're too villainous. Like, they're going to win. You know, they're not going to win, but they don't regret it. Like, there's very few. I want these people to, like, it would be cool if, like, this was a grab for power. And then this thing happens to the cardinal, and they're like, oh shit, but they can't stop it.
Yes.
You know, like, they've made this Faustian bargain, and it's too late to go back,
mm-hmm.
and everyone regrets it and fights against it. That mm-hmm. would be cool.
Yeah.
But everyone is just on board for it, even knowing what happens.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to turn into this, like, crazy monster that, like, you know, just eats people and does terrible off-screen things that makes them scream, but I'm down with it. Everyone's just down with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's real depressing. I don't like the boss fight that much either. Like,
no, well, it brings up a huge weakness in this that I was talking to you about it a little bit earlier, but like, so in RPGs, climactic battles tend to be very difficult and very rewarding. And Final Fantasy Tactics makes climactic battles very difficult, but not very rewarding. I mean, from like a mechanical character advancement standpoint.
Right.
Because from this point on, every major battle, it is in your 100% best interest to end it as soon as possible. And that means your characters are doing less and you're gaining less experience and less job points. And it means that, like, because that there's that need for like absolute alacrity, like if you're, let's say you're leveling Rams as a thief for a little bit because you want to get to a ninja like I am, I can't have him as a ninja during this fight or as a thief during this fight because it's too weak of a class. Like, I have to revert everyone back to their safest bet, their safest, quickest, most powerful bet. And it kind of throws the advancement out of the window. Like, the boss fights take place outside of the main, character advancement of the game.
You would like to think that whatever choice you made, there was a way out. But there's not.
Like, well, ultimately, I'm going to make a character that would be able to deal with this. But the characters are in this state of, like, kind of a half-baked nature until the end of Chapter 3 when they start, really solidifying.
Right.
You know, so you can't, like, these quiches ain't done. it's a classic case of these quiche ain't done.
Is that from something?
No.
Okay. That makes Stephen. We can't have dinner at 5:30. These quiches ain't done.
Yeah, these quiche ain't done, and Q-Clan is trying to eat your quiche. Look, all you need to know about Final Fantasy Tactics is quiche. Q-Clan likes quiche, but quiches ain't done. The end. Game facts. Gary Butterfield.
10 out of 10.
I dedicate this to my dead aunt. The end.
Oh, God. Okay, I need to regather. You can't just drop that on me without warning, dog.
I wasn't planning it. I didn't wake up this morning. I was like, you know what Final Fantasy Tactics is like? Quiche. Huh.
It's like, I wonder if I can make the podcast all about this now.
Yeah, I know. I wonder how often I can bring up quiche.
It's an inherently funny word.
It is an inherently funny word.
Yeah. So
inherently funny food.
It's weird. It's like egg pie. I don't even know. I just need to get back to talking about boring gameplay stuff.
Well, you just have to bring your most powerful things to bear to him as soon as possible.
Yeah.
The only way to win.
Well, it sucks because this breaks the rule of like outnumbering, and this, it could have been used to a really good effect, but I don't feel like it was. I just like, even like people who are ostensibly really good at the game on YouTube, I've always played it and like won by the skin of my teeth if I win at all. Right. Mm-hmm. And like everybody else that I see play in this, it's like, yeah, if he decides to blast you with his instant death attack that can, hit half of the map, then you're done.
Right.
You know,
it's just too in the hands of random number God.
Yeah.
Like this battle, like there's too few factors you can control.
Yeah.
For this.
So for however interesting it is from a story perspective, even if it does mark the point where it goes off the rails. Yeah. Mechanically, I can't get behind it at all.
And I think that's just about true for almost all the boss fights. Like, I haven't revisited them for this playthrough, but this is kind of a template for these, these demons when you fight them. Like, sometimes they have, there's a little bit kind of twist to them, or they have different abilities. But a lot of them are similar to this. This one's kind of unique because it's a very cramped quarters.
Yeah.
Is part of the problem. I mean, this one's maybe the worst for this specific problem. It's not the worst boss fight in the game, which we'll get to. And that's real infamous. But that'll take place next episode.
Yeah. So that rounds out the plot. Basically, Ramza is branded as a heretic because to the eyes of the world, he didn't kill a gigantic glutton monster. He killed a church official, and this church kind of runs everything. He is a pariah now.
And that wraps up this half of the game. Next episode, we will be covering chapters 3 and 4.
We don't have any real general stuff to cover. I think we hit all of it in there. So we can feel free to proceed to the next chapter. As we said at the beginning, this episode is brought to you by Audible.com. And for you, our dear listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Because we like to keep our recommendations on theme, if possible, I looked through my entire library of fantasy and found most of it to be incredibly embarrassing. and because I'm not a Game of Thrones fan, haven't read it, haven't given it a chance, really. And that would be the obvious one to say for this. I'm going to go to...
The characters even say it at some point.
Yes, yes, they do.
Yeah.
That's because the translator was a big fan of this, is what I read, was a big fan of Game of Thrones. So instead of that, I'm going to do a great book about an actual real-life war, Catch-22. It's not a controversial pick. I think, you know, the fact that it's required reading for a lot of high schoolers is, you know, it says a lot about just kind of how universally loved it is. But I think it's great. Again, not an original opinion. The audiobook version of it's actually really, really good. The guy who reads it, I have it up here. His name is J.O. Sanders. It's the same guy throughout the entire thing, but he does character voices really well, and it works really well in audio format, especially considering how like weird and nonlinear the entire book is. So,
yeah, I can get behind that. Yeah. If you're looking for something fantasy, just real quick to throw something on the fantasy train, two things. So if you're looking for something fantasy, I've got a real weakness for David Eddings' The Belgariad series of books. Have you ever read those?
No.
They're good. I mean they're fantasy, but they're real compelling, really good genre fiction. And then the other thing related is I would like to recommend Finding Your Niche with Quiche. It's this new book about identity and Quiche. From Behendrundendrundend to Hennen Press, and they actually get Gator Boy to read it. So if you can find that, you can get that for free with our trial.
they may have pulled it first. But.
Yeah, they may, mostly it's just him ranting about his ex-wife. Like it starts out about Quiche, and then it's just like. Exhausted, bitch, and then it just kind of it's just him drunkenly rambling, and then there's like 45 minutes of him snoring at the end. So, yeah,
that sounds amazing, Gary.
It is an audio treat, and if you wanted to download any of these audio treats, how would you do it, Cole?
Well, it's very easy. You just go to audibletrial.com/watchoutforfireballs. Again, just in case you missed it. audibletrials.com/watchoutforfireballs for your free audiobook today.
Yeah, do it. Big help for the show.
Yes.
So if you can do it. So you have heard what we have to say about Final Fantasy Tactics. We have a couple listener responses here. We shall read. Yes. I will go ahead and go first.
Okay.
With Stuart K., who submitted via email. And he says, Final Fantasy Tactics is, to me, fucking hilarious. This is mainly because I play Ramza as a yelling, screaming, dictionary-throwing lunatic. I mean, can you imagine trying to fight some kid who stands stock still and yells at himself until time bends around him? Ramza is a fucking heretic. Also rad is the mind-numbing English in the original translation. Quotes like, life is short, bury, and master of all swords, cut energy, make me laugh every time. What does that even mean? They're sort of like a medieval @horse_ebooks tweets.
Have you seen horse ebooks?
Yeah, I love horse ebooks. they're great, great points. the original version has all these, like, your ability names don't make any sense.
Right.
So, yeah, that's hilarious. Dictionary throwing lunatic. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So you have to be a ninja who has dictionaries to throw, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you actually use the dictionaries as a class that would use them, you just read out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then you just learn something new.
Yeah. Knowledge ain't dangerous.
Hold on 1 second, Cole. Okay. I want to give you another point. Go! Get up! There we go.
What the fuck? Right.
Dictionary. 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 Dictionary.
You're high if you think that I'm cutting that out.
I want a dictionary there. I just didn't want to have me looking for it.
No.
Dictionary.
I couldn't remember what two it was.
Dictionary.
Stop it. Thank you, Stuart, for inspiring that.
Dictionary.
Moving on. Randall Thiel says, "The world of Final Fantasy Tactics is silly, but I took it very seriously when I was 10, and I love that Square made an even more deadpan translation for the War of the Lions release, so I can continue to take it very seriously. Other Square legacy titles like Xenogears and Final Fantasy VII could really use this treatment. I love the War of the Lions remake, but I couldn't bear the thought of staring at my PC for or my PSP rather. But I couldn't bear the thought of staring at my PSP for another 60 hours. So this time I'm playing an emulated version with the FFT complete patch. I was wary of bugs, but so far this seems like the optimum way to revisit Final Fantasy Tactics. I remember this game falling apart a little later on, but the first half is so, so good. If the animations and inputs were just a little brisker, it would be perfect."
Yeah, I haven't messed around with any of like the past versions or anything online, but this game has a huge support community for that.
Yeah, I didn't know there was such a thing.
They're really interesting. Like, they let you, they're like kind of custom jobs that other characters in the game have that you can unlock.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. It's pretty neat. Like, I just haven't fucked with it. And a lot of like balance mods.
Mm-hmm.
So things making like ignore weather useful.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Huh.
Yeah. Pretty neat. John Solinay says, "Calculator is the best class and really the best thing in any video game ever. I became obsessed with prime numbers for a few months after playing Tactics for the first time. Come to think of it, it even inspired a really painfully dissonant 19-tone, entirely prime number scale that I used for one of my super early AMIA works. So Final Fantasy Tactics, great game, and partially responsible for me making some music that Gary would totally hate, and a completely unfollowable plotline." I probably would hate that, John. So
I don't even know what he means by 19-tone.
Dissonant 19 tone?
Yeah.
Prime number scale? Sign me up. calculators, we will get to them. Like, we'll talk about calculators.
Yeah, there's this whole second tier of jobs that, like, you just have no opportunity to get to. You have opportunity, but you don't encounter them in the wild.
Yeah, you have to kind of chance that. They're hard to get to.
Yeah.
But calculators are pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want to come up with some kind of ham-fisted way to get us to the deliberation battlefield. So you can just play, can you just say dictionary for me?
DJ! Dictionary. Dictionary.
So we've gone ahead and gone into our deliberation DJ booth, and we've decided that Stuart K's response was
very good,
and that he has earned a
dictionary.
So, and by that we mean a copy of the game we are doing next.
Yes, so the game we are doing next that is not also Final Fantasy Tactics, unless that's what you want.
Yep.
So we are going to. I don't even know. I can't even recover, dude. So just as a brief aside, if you would like to participate in those, we are taking responses for the second half of this game. So if you want to spoil any plot stuff, now is the time to do it. So, especially if you want to talk about these really high level classes. So listen in at the end for all of the ways to get a hold of us.
Yep.
So,
indeed.
Yeah. So the next game we're doing, is the second half of this game, where things apparently fall apart. Do you want me to say what's coming after that?
Yeah, let's go down.
Yes, so coming up next is something I'm really excited about. Gary, I think you are too. Resident Evil 2. I intend to play Claire A, Leon B.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I believe.
And as of now, I'm doing the opposite. So Leon A, Claire B.
Yes.
Claire B. And looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Like that game a whole lot.
If you want
to
get
that, another game I'm looking forward to.
Yes.
What were you saying?
I was going to say, if you want to get a hold of that, it's on PSN. You can also get the GameCube version, or I believe it's quite cheap on Amazon for PlayStation 1 as well.
Yeah, this game was readily available. It was huge.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at our slate of titles, and I'm excited about all of it.
Yeah.
So after that, we're doing Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Because you demanded it, we are doing a and then by you, it sounded like I was talking to the audience, but I meant Cole.
Yeah.
Because you demanded it, Cole. We are doing a Sonic game, but I'm actually really looking forward to revisiting this with a more critical eye and perhaps a kinder one.
Okay.
Than in the past, my kind of just like, this isn't better than Mario. Fuck this shit.
Yeah.
And then just kind of moving on. Yeah. Who cares if it's better than Mario? Maybe it's good in its own right.
Yeah. If you go in just knowing that Mario is better and without an axe to grind, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. So that's my hope, is that for me to finally open my mind. If I free my mind, then the rest will follow.
Yes.
I'm trying to be colorblind and happy to shallow.
In a metaphorical way, as opposed to a very real physical way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's like, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm always trying. You don't even have to try to be colorblind. I need to follow that up with the rest of the En Vogue song.
So after Sonic 3 and Knuckles, we're going to play Metroid Prime, the original. For GameCube, real cheap if you get the GameCube version. You have to be one of the richest kings in Europe to afford the Wii version.
Yeah, the trilogy version.
Yeah,
that's what I was actually looking for this playthrough. Like, I went to the two local GameStops just thinking, like, oh, I kind of want to play these games anyway. Maybe it'd be worth buying, but neither of them had it.
When last I worked there, there was no copy of it within 100 miles, and its price was $80 on shelf.
Oh. $80 is too more than I would spend. I was thinking I was going to top out at like 50 or something like that for used.
Nope.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah, they discontinued it for some reason, for some reason.
Yeah. It's like the Disney vaults. We're putting this back in the Nintendo vaults for 40 years. After that, so this is the announcement for that. To play Metroid Prime, you just need to go buy it.
Yep.
So there's no DLC version of it or anything. It's a game I have a lot of fond memories of, but I haven't played since it came out. So I'm really hoping that stands up. After that, we are doing Max Payne.
Yes, it's Shoot Shit the game.
Yep. It is a game, again, I have a lot of affection for. I played this when it came out. I haven't played the third one. I played the second one. I like that a lot. It is like one of my favorite like dumb action games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not that much to this. There's a little bit of extra subtext, but mostly it is a really kind of arcadey room by room shooter.
Yeah.
Introduced bullet time to like a whole generation of gaming. And it's one of like Rockstar's most focused efforts. Like, it kind of makes me think of like Rockstar before Rockstar got all
Rockstar
fucking, you know, Rockstar-y. Yeah, like your cousin never calls you to go bowling and you don't lose anything for saying no.
Right.
In Max Payne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Max Payne, which is widely available on Steam. It's almost always on sale for like
$1.25. Yeah.
Anytime there's a Rockstar sale. Otherwise, I think it's $2.50. Mm-hmm. It's like so cheap. Like, yeah. So if you want to play it, it's very easy to get a hold of.
If you're willing to drop a little bit more coin, you can get it on the Xbox 360 as an Xbox Classic. I believe it's $15. That's how I will have to play it. And I think it might be available as a PS2 Classic on PSN, but I've stopped being able to rely on what is on PSN or not. So
I would say if you're able to, I mean, not specifically you, because you've probably already considered this, but it's easier to play with a mouse and keyboard than it is with a controller.
Yeah, I just don't have a machine that can run it reliably.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's bad on me. Maybe I'll have my new computer that by then. We're talking about months in advance. So
yeah, that would be cool. It'd be definitely, if you get a new computer, I will gift you a Max Payne.
Oh, cool. So, wait a minute.
All right. Seems fair. So until then, if you want to suggest a game, get in touch with us through some various channels, and we're still looking for suggestions. This actually is more or less like what we had planned. We have a couple other things that are kind of in the woodworks, but we are very much open to suggestions right now.
Yeah.
If you want to get a hold of us, you can do it through the Facebook group. We are on Twitter. We are on YouTube. We are on duckfeed.tv/contact. We haven't gotten a voicemail for a very long time.
Yeah. I'll read you that number. That is 419-834-WOFF.
Yeah, if Cole's forgetting the voicemail, it means that we haven't announced it, and that's because you guys aren't calling.
Yeah.
Give us a call. We'll play your shit.
Yeah, whatever you say.
Yeah, well, exactly. Not whatever racist tirades you want to go on, we will endorse with our podcast.
We will be your platform.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely check out that stuff if you want to get a hold of us, if you want to support the show. There's iTunes ratings, iTunes reviews. There's telling your friends.
That's a big one.
There's talking about on blogs. Yeah, the friends is the big, big, big thing. Friends of yours should be friends of ours.
Yes. All of those particular things. There is some commerce stuff that's happening. So we do a sideshow for this. Not murderous like Sideshow Bob, but kind of close. It's called Abject Suffering, where we play bad games that you suggest. And we complain about them for a half hour. It's real funny, Gary says, and I agree. It's some of our best work.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can get that by either making a $2 tribute on the page or buying our app in the iOS App Store through the Podcast Box app, or on Android just by searching for us in the Amazon App Store.
Yeah, and those are one-time purchases.
Yes.
So it's $2 for a lifetime of abject suffering, assuming that we live longer than you. So if you live longer than us, then we cannot guarantee that you get a lifetime of this.
Right, you're right, unless we pass the mantle on.
watch out for fireballs, babies. the next generation.
Other than that, because of some advancements in the platform that we're using for our website, we can have a store open now. So things like the magnets will be more readily available. So look for details on that. They are real neat. The people who have gotten them have been very happy with them. That should be available soon. So keep an eye out.
Moving on to like kind of merch that we're not really selling. A couple episodes ago, we talked about, so I have three prototype Watch Out for Fireballs t-shirts that I made. The interest in the shirts kind of didn't go very far. Like, a couple people were into it, but it's a big money investment, so we never actually went with it. But I have three of them, and that's enough for me, for Cole, and for one lucky you. So I'm going to mail those out this week to our contest winner. And the kind of stipulation of that contest was that if you did the tribute or the app, you were entered in to win the shirt. Mm-hmm. It is a large shirt. That's just what they are. similar to the Dark Souls contest we had, just kind of what we have lying around.
So the winner of the remaining Watch Out for Fireballs shirt, it is orange. It has waffle on it. It's real neat. Mm-hmm. Is Amy Holbrook.
Yep. Congratulations, Amy. It is one of three of a kind currently. And so get in touch with us through messaging services with your address, and I will send it to you. It is clean, but has been worn. So just letting you know, they are prototype shirts.
Yes.
So they were. So I hope that doesn't gross you out. Why did I not think about that before we held this contest? Gross! Quick, get out of it.
Dictionary.
Okay. It's fine.
I know.
It's been washed with soap and water. So I'd be happy to send that to you if that grosses you out. Then let me know and I'll be hurt. But we'll send you that. I'm going to send Cole a copy as well. If you are listening to this and you're like, man, I want a shirt. This is nerps. Then let us know and maybe we'll revisit the idea of making shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I'd want to put in one final plug. I don't want this to turn into Return of the King, but if you're going to be buying anything on Amazon, you can do that and support the show by going to duckfeed.tv/tribute and doing it through that link, which gives us a little kickback. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and it helps support things like hosting the website and hosting the shows and things like that. So it helps this not cost us money. So that's kind of a big thing. Other than that, we said everything. I don't want to keep you here longer than is necessary. So
So until next time, watch out for,
you know what I want to hear. You know what I want to hear.
Okay. Until next time, watch out for until next time, watch out for
4, 3, 2, 1
dictionary. Okay, there we go. Hey, you're the star of the show, Yamaha. I forgot that you could throw dictionaries in this game. That's all it took.
I'm sorry, you can throw what?
I turn it on every time I do that.
DJ! Very good dictionary.
Very good
DJ.
Dictionary.
Listen. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Dictionary.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'll keep it on.
Okay.
It's the Watch Out for Fireball soundboard now. Sorry. Where's the...
Good. Very...
There we are.